Mr. Lloyd.
You graduated Lakewood, right?
Yes, sir.
What are you going to do now?
Now what? Now what?
What are your plans for the future?
Spend as much time possible with Diane before she leaves.
Seriously, Lloyd?
I'm totally and completely serious.
No, really.
You mean my career? I don't know. I've thought about this quite a bit, sir, and I would have to say, considering what's waiting out there for me, I don't want to sell anything, buy anything, or process anything as a career. I don't want to sell anything bought or processed, or buy anything sold or processed, or process anything sold, bought, or processed, or repair anything sold, bought, or processed. You know, as a career, I don't want to do that. So, my father's in the Army. He wants me to join, but I can't work for that corporation. So what I've been doing lately is kickboxing. Which is a sport, but I think it's got a good future. As far as career longevity, I don't really know because, you know, you can't really tell. If you're a fighter, you know, it's no good. You know, you have to be great, but I can't really tell if I'm great until I've had a couple of pro fights. But I haven't been knocked down yet. I don't know, I can't figure it all out tonight, so I'm just going to hang with your daughter.
Broadcasting multiplex of CBS Radio. This is the Rick Emerson Show.
It's so true. There you go. There's John Cusack, in whose shadow all men live. Doesn't matter. I don't care who it is you date. I don't care who you marry. I don't care who it is that you share your home, your heart, your house, your bed, or your whatever with. Doesn't matter. Whoever you're with, I'd rather be with John Cusack.
No, not John Cusack. We're saying Lloyd Dobler.
Lloyd Dobler. It's true. Or what's his name? Denny from Stand By Me. That was his other dreamy role. All right. Why, hello. It's 3 minutes and 25 seconds after the hour of 11, and it's the month of July in the year of our Lord, 2007. Thank you for coming by and making a part of your listening day. We are live from the plushly appointed, yet not overly ostentatious studios of AM 970 Solid State Radio. This, my friends, my compadres, my companions, my amigos. This is the Rick Emerson radio program. Thank you so much. And my Windows Media Player was skipping a little bit there. But it was either that or this audio some guy sent me from Johnny Mnemonic. There's really not anything that I... Maybe I haven't seen Johnny Mnemonic as many times as I really should. I don't remember anything good about that movie. It's quite possible that I just overlooked it, but I'm suspecting that's not the case. Why, hello, it's 503-733-2970. 503-733-2970. It is Tuesday, and welcome to Day 12. It's 503-733-2970. Your comments, your clarifications, your conventions, your 2 cents, your corrections, your what have you. 503-733-2970. You can also email if you like. It's rick@rickemerson.com if you want to engage with us in a binary fashion. rick@rickemerson.com. You can also email the rest of the cast and crew, sarah@970.am, tim@970.am, or scottyj@970.am. I do kind of wonder what sort of things people email Scotty J about. I mean, I know why people email him. People send Tim news stories, and people send Sarah any number of long, droning observations about her all-too-obvious struggle with alcohol. But I don't understand why people... Really? Is that true? They have long, explicit dreams about you. Really? Okay. Well, I guess if you want to share those details with Scotty J, you can do that. It's scottyj@970.am. If you want to call us, it's 503-733-2970. Did I say it was Wednesday? It's Tuesday. Right? Tomorrow's Wednesday, the 4th of July.
It is.
All right. Tomorrow is Wednesday, the 4th of July. We'll be here for that rolling on through the week, as is our want. It's kind of a weird day off. I guess I sort of assumed that everybody in the country would get like Monday or Friday off. It's kind of strange to have a day right in the middle of the week. I can't even imagine how low productivity is this week. Can anybody really be putting in like a full day's work today? Or tomorrow, for that matter? Everybody's going to show up tomorrow just drunk and sunburned, missing a finger or two. So I can't... You're putting a vacation, doesn't matter to me. I mean, I'll be here doing the same stellar job that we always do. I'm just saying, it seems like if you put a vacation day right in the middle of the week, it seems like productivity plummets on either side of it. That would be my estimation of the situation. All right. It's 503-733-2970. Scotty J is back in his proper role as call screener today, so if you'd like to weigh in with your thoughts or comments on whatever, what have you, odds, ends, you can do that. 503-733-2970. We did almost an entire day of unscreened calls yesterday. I think the only time that calls were screened was like at about 1:25. We had some screen calls, and that's only because I think Scotty was done with his so-called news segments for a while, and he was getting ready to go back into one of the production rooms to cut together his afternoon news to play during Tom Likas, which is fantastic, because it's sort of like listening to Scotty's news. Don't get me wrong, he's got spunk. I admire his get up and go, his moxie, but listening to Scotty's afternoon news is sort of like looking at that. I don't know, it's just like, it's like looking at one of those big quilts they unveil at the National Mall every year, where it's like a veterans quilt or an AIDS quilt or something, where 10,000 panels all very obviously stitched together out of different segments of material. That's Scotty's news. Every word recorded, it's like punching in one syllable at a time, painstakingly crafted together into 90 seconds of news. It sort of ends up sounding like it was voiced by that Microsoft Sam guy. That's all I'm saying. All right, it's 503-733-2970. First and foremost, don't forget, we're going to be here tomorrow, 4th of July. We will be here declaring our Independence Day and what have you. Also, don't forget, coming up Saturday, this coming Saturday is 7707. We're going to be at Outlaws Music Hall. Find out more at outlawsmusichall.com. Outlaws Music Hall this coming Saturday, 7707. As we celebrate the luckiest day of the century, with giveaways every 7 minutes starting at 7:07. And, of course, headlining act Vanilla Ice this coming Saturday. We're going to be at Outlaws for that. So don't forget. So you want to be getting your tickets for that now, by the way, because, as always, they are more at the door. So do that now. Don't delay. Don't wait. I got this gut sense, just a feeling, a vibe, just a general sort of my finger on the pulse of the American zeitgeist. I have a feeling the Vanilla Ice show is going to be pretty big. It's not really a phrase I ever thought I'd use on the show, but there you go. So get your tickets now for that. That is coming up this Saturday, 7:07. Coming up today on the program, CNN Radio correspondent Lisa Goddard will be joining us. James Roop talking about, I don't even know what Roop is talking about. Oh, no, we're not even talking to Roop. Why did I say that? We're talking to Steve Kastenbaum. You know, the CNN prep sheet was written badly this morning. Like, it had Lisa talking about a hot dog thing, and it had, like, Steve Kastenbaum talking about wildfires, and, like, Amanda Moyer was talking about, like, I don't know, like pothole repair somewhere. Everything was mismatched. All right, so we have Lisa Goddard today. We have Steve Kastenbaum was talking about that Kobayashi guy. Was he Japanese? Right, the hot dog eating guy. But apparently, there's some whole dark cloud looming over his hot dog eating future. Because I swear to God, I guess he's developed some case of, he's like jaw arthritis, rheumatism, consumption, whatever it is. I guess it wouldn't be consumption. How ironic would it be if his hot dog eating career was derailed by a case of consumption? Anywho, let's see. What else do we have here? Portlanders are filled with rage at Matt Groening. We'll tell you why. What else? Two maimings and a fantastic explosion. And later on, we'll try to do the top five. Hey, it's 503-733-2970. I don't know why people, let's see who they get. Hi, Rick Emerson Show. Hello there.
Hey, how's it going, Rick?
What's up?
This is me being really productive today, by the way,
for
work. I just wanted to tell you, I worked in a record store in the 90s, and yesterday took me back to a dark place.
Yes, yesterday put you back into a long, dim tunnel.
It was my pain cave.
I was
curled in a fetal position.
My private pain. My private pain cave.
Yeah.
What is pain cave from? Is that from Wayne's World?
I have no idea. My roommate says it all the time.
I think there was an episode of Wayne's World where they're singing a song and it's a whole lot of like, come into my pain cave.
They're out there with Hurt Garden or something.
Hurt Garden.
God. Anyway, just tell you the song that was going through my head the whole time.
Here we go again. This is because, here, you know what this is?
I'm starting something, am I?
No, it's not that you're starting, you're continuing something. This is the thing, Sarah and I were talking about this yesterday, because we did, for several reasons, because Tim was gone yesterday, and so Scotty was filling in, and so the whole show was a little skew to begin with. And then Scotty had made this observation about this band, Vertical Horizon, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
If you were listening yesterday, you know what I'm talking about. And then it just came, took on a life of its own. But this is one of those things you got to be careful with now, because Sarah and I, after yesterday's show, were like, well, we can't, Because we came to the conclusion of yesterday's show that there were like 10,000 other songs we hadn't mentioned.
Oh, 10 million.
But we had, and we're like, well, we can't do it again on Tuesday. And so we thought, well, maybe we'll do it for like an hour on Friday just to sort of close out the week. Because these sorts of things, this is like the trying to put the genie back in the bottle. You know what I mean? It's like once these spring-loaded snakes jump out of the can, you can never put them back in. Okay, I will allow you and only you.
I was playing it in jukeboxes all night last night to piss people off.
Okay, just to suggest, this is going to have to hold us till Friday, because we're not going to revisit the subject until Friday, and then after that, never again. Okay. After that, it gets sealed back into a box, never to be reopened. All right, so what is it? You will have the sole contribution on the subject today, sir. Don't choke.
All right, it's Damn, I Wish I Was Your Lover by Sophie B. Hawkins.
Sophie B. Hawkins. That was like her, and that was her only hit. The only thing I know about Sophie B. Hawkins other than that song is I saw her on an episode of Politically Incorrect one time, and she looked like she ought to be working like on a riveting line somewhere at a Boeing plant. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
All right.
Excellent song. Thanks a lot, man.
Thank you, sir.
All right, bye.
There you go. Back when he was working at a record store in the 90s. Selling music, but not selling out. It's 503-733. That was one of the two taglines.
I know for Empire Records.
What was the other one?
What
was the other tagline for that movie?
I don't know. I'm not aware.
Empire Records, open till midnight.
That was the tagline?
That was the second tagline. Depending on which version of the DVD for Empire Records you pick up, one of them says, they're selling music, not selling out. I mean, and that one just makes your skin crawl. It's so bad. It's so corporate.
I love that movie, but at the same time, there's something about it that I despise.
Well, you know why Empire Records existed. They asked Kevin Smith, I believe this is the story, they asked Kevin Smith to write sort of like a Clerks-type movie about a record store. They're like, hey, could you do that thing you do with Clerks, but make it at a record store instead? And he was like, nah, you know, I'm busy doing this fantastic movie about a mall. It's going to be great. I don't have time for your movie with Liv Tyler and all of these other no-names. I can't, and Renee Zellweger. I can't be bothered. I'm making Mallrats. So he passed on making Clerks 2, basically, in a record store. And so they just went ahead and did it without him. And they hired some guy. I don't even know who did it. They hired some guy to write Empire Records. And that was supposed to be a Kevin Smith film, basically. So there you go. Open till midnight. Let's see, what else do we have here? Well, that's it. We're joined today, as are we always, by the lovely and talented Sarah S. Dillon. Why, hello, and how are you?
I'm doing well.
Fantastic.
I'm going to a show tonight. I'm excited.
Is that Band of Horses?
I am.
I don't know if my wife's going to that or not. They were just here, though, it seems like, just not too long ago.
I don't know. I didn't catch them last time they were in town.
Neither did she, actually. She went with a friend of hers who then brought her daughter along. And, of course, you know that always works out well, because it was Lara's friend and then the friend's, like, 12-year-old daughter. And so they stay through the opening act, and then as soon as the opening act is done, the daughter starts, you know, something, and blah, 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 I have homework. And so then the friend is like, well, would it be okay if we didn't stay for the actual headliner? Can we leave now? And so Lara had purchased tickets to see this band, and then she's got to, like, leave, and she never even got to see Band of Horses, because she had to go home, you know, because this was her ride with her friend. So there you go. Anyway, so that's that. They do that St. Augustine song, right?
Yeah, I don't know the titles of a lot of their songs. I've just heard a lot of their music. A lot of my friends are huge fans. Yeah. I've been listening to it for a long time.
It's really great. It's really ethereal. It sounds like it's like a band where everything they do kind of sounds like that. It's a Cowboy Junkies album, the Trinity Sessions. Like this ghostly, sort of churchified, sort of weird, floating kind of soft, I don't say soft rock, but it's almost like a weird acoustic version of The Cure in some ways. It's really beautiful. So they're at The Crystal tonight, right?
They are, yes.
So you ought to check it. It's not really my style, but they are pretty great. Let's see. All right, and so forth. Tim Riley returns today. How are you, sir?
Fine, and you?
You enjoy your time away?
I did. It was marvelous.
Fantastic. Tim Riley's working on the following stories for your edification today.
I'll pardon Scooter Libby even more if I want to, threatened the president.
I'll hella pardon him.
There's an attempted kidnapping at the Hippie Shack in Milwaukee. An Oregon man must pay $50,000 from storing a dead friend in a freezer. Terror at 20,000 feet. An item... I have taken the day off, haven't I? An Idaho man survives being nearly sucked out of a broken jet window.
How was that dental trip? Sounds like you're all full of Novocaine or something.
I know, it does.
All right. Would you like
I'm
to
not used to speaking.
Would you like to do that again? Why don't you just tease those all once more?
I'll pardon Scooter Libby even more if I feel like it, threatens the president. There's an attempted kidnapping at the Hippie Shack in Milwaukee. An Oregon man must pay $50,000 for storing a dead friend in a freezer. Terror at 20,000 feet. An Idaho man survives being nearly sucked out of a broken jet window.
Now, see, I thought we determined last week that that doesn't happen.
Well,
who were we talking to the other day? It wasn't the reptile guy.
I swear to God, we were talking to some guy.
It was after I got back, and we were talking about the emergency exit.
And we were talking to somebody in the air.
And you can't take it out.
And I was talking about how you can't open the door, because if you notice, to open those doors on the airplane, you got to pull them in slightly before they'll open outward. And the air pressure is, they're designed that way so that you can't open them in mid-flight. And then I asked the guy, I said, what if somebody was to take out a handgun and, like, shoot a hole through one of those windows? Would you be sucked out? And the guy said no. And it's probably been on an episode of Mythbusters or something at some point. We should probably look into
that. Well, this guy has several staples in his head right now.
Really?
Yeah.
Staples in your head. All right, fantastic. All right, hi. Well, never mind. We were going to talk to somebody about... No, the answer to that is no. Somebody was calling to see, ask if we, if anybody here had seen Room 1014. Or what? Is that what it is? 1014?
1408.
1411. Has anybody seen Room 9172V? No. No, I don't know. I haven't, sir. I spent the weekend on the sofa, not moving or doing anything of any kind at all. I just sat around and did a whole lot of nothing. The last movie I saw in the theater was Nancy Drew, so I got nothing. Let's see. Well, what do we have? We might as well get to some of the things that people are talking. We'll do this, and then with the coming up at the bottom of the hour, we have CNN radio correspondent Amanda Moyer, who's going to be joining us and so forth. But while we're talking about can you be sucked out of a jet airplane window or whatever this was, well, it was a commuter plane. Well, that makes even less sense. You can't be a commuter plane doesn't even go up that high. I don't even think the air pressure would be all that different. Well, it doesn't matter. Before we talk about this, the stuff that I got written down, but it's time to spin the wheel of what are we going to do next. Okay, so I have this weird question. See, I have that thing. I have an itch on my nose, and I'm scratching my nose, and it's making Sarah do the same thing. I'm sorry. I don't mean to... It's just
the allergies. My allergies have kicked up again. No. In a bad way. I was sneezing all morning.
I inhaled a bunch of dust this morning. That was everything.
Oh, was it on your bike ride in?
No. Are you trying to be smart? I did not let my bike in.
Are you trying to screw mentally retarded children out of money?
I don't have to try, Sarah. It comes naturally. I don't have to try or work at it in any way. I can just do it with a flick of my wrist. I know Seamus was nagging me for not giving daily updates on the bike. We announce it at the end of the program, typically. No, I did not ride yesterday or today, and I have no reason for it. Get off my back! I inhaled some dust this morning, though, and it's just one of those things where it's like, I don't mean to be gross, but it's like, you ever do that where you inhale some dust or some pollen or whatever, and no matter how much you blow your nose or whatever, like, there's no way to get it out. Like, you can't, your nose isn't like the front of a jetliner. You can't, like, open it up and just have some guy come in and clean it out. There's no, in the future, though, there will be nanobots. In the future, you'll be able to, I'm telling you this right now, this is my Criswell moment. In the future, you'll be able to get miniature robots that you can just spray into your nose, and they'll go up, they'll clean out the inside of your nose and remove the dust particles. I'm telling you, that'll be like in some Kurt Vonnegut novel. And you'll be able to get like some sort of an atomizer. Doesn't an atomizer sound like a made-up word? It's one of those things from the 50s you spritz perfume with. What did they call that before the 50s? Because the atomizer has to have been one of those words created around the same time as Tang and Cool Whip. You know what I mean? They just called it a sprayer. Sprayer. Anyway, so you'll be able to inject robots into your nose. I sound really high right now.
You really do. Robots in your nose?
You'll be able to inject robots into your nose. All right. No. What were we doing? Yes, the wheel of what are we going to do next? Again. Okay. Here's my question of science. Does having the light on in your room make it easier to read your computer monitor? Go.
I don't think so.
Tim Riley?
No.
Really? I was trying to figure this out the other day because Laura was sitting in the...
Well, it causes more reflection on the...
Well, but glare notwithstanding. Because we have a glare shield that, like, removes this so that the light overhead doesn't glare. Laura was in her home office. At the home office. She was in her office at home, and she was doing some work on the internet, but she was in a pitch black office for some reason. I guess she'd just been working there, and the sun had gone down, and the whatever. And so she's in this pitch black office, just like answering some email with the computer light on, you know, with the monitor there. And I said, well, it's, you know, I said, it's kind of dark in here. You shouldn't work in the dark. And so I flicked the light on, and there's no glare because we have this shield that reduces the glare. But then I had this whole question going in my head about, does the light being on in the room have any bearing on whether the computer monitor is... In fact, does the light overhead being off make the monitor actually easier to read? Does the amount of other extant light in the room affect whether or not the computer monitor is easy to see and read? And I honestly don't know the answer to that. So, please give me the answer to that now. 503-733-2970. 503-733-2970. 2970. We'll talk Simpsons in just a moment. Hi, you're on the Rick Emerson Show.
Her allergies are related to her drinking.
Yes, they are. Thank you, sir.
A lot of barley, hops, malt, whatever else going on.
Oh,
there.
I see. I thought you were being... I thought you were
I'm
being...
I'm a guy from yesterday.
Are you, in fact, the guy from... No, hold on, before we back up.
I wasn't even mean, but you guys were very mean to me. I wasn't even nasty at all.
Were you the douche that called yesterday and...
I said you're a douche. What do you think of that?
Well, I didn't drink anything yesterday.
So is your mother.
I don't...
Really?
Wait, am I... To...
Hold on. Is he still there? Are you still there? Dude?
Of course I'm here. I don't just hang up on people. Well, I didn't call you a dude.
You hung up on us yesterday.
Nice.
You hung up on us yesterday.
I'm on a cell phone. I'm glad you're still there. Be
sure.
Nice.
It's a
well,
poor
if you
work...
had the, if you were able to sit there and listen all day, why didn't you call back when your cell phone started working?
It's a poor workman who blames his tools, John.
I'm just wondering, that's all.
This is the guy who called yesterday and said... Well, you know what? I don't mean to start anything, but, you know, Sarah, I know the signs, and Sarah has a drinking problem. Click.
Okay, well, sir, I can...
Not at all. Not at all what I said.
No,
That's not what I said.
You know it.
It's completely what you said.
Now I am hanging up.
Bye now. You'll be missed.
He still couldn't get a word in edgewise.
And coming from a guy who sounds like he's three quarters in the bag, too.
He's difficult to talk to.
Well, it's because he's a douche. All right. 503-733-2970. Let's just take these calls. Oh, hi. Hello. You're on the Rick Emerson Show.
Hey there, Rick. I got a quick question for you.
Does it involve Sarah's drinking or that guy being a douche?
It definitely does not.
Oh.
Hey,
well done. Yes.
Studio 60. Is it over?
Oh, it's done. It's gone. It's done a long time. Yeah, it's gone. It's gone away.
Was that climactic ending all those episodes?
Here's the thing. Don't give it away. Don't be a dick because I haven't watched it yet because I knew it was going to be canceled. And so I quit watching it. So I'm going to go back and watch the whole thing now on DVD, though. It was just getting moved around and yanked by the network and stuck back on at like random times. So I'm going to buy the whole DVD set when it comes out and I'm going to watch the entire series front to back. So if people really want to be jerks and spoil it for me, they can. But I have not seen the final, six, seven episodes because I deliberately stopped watching because I knew it was just going to break my heart. So I'm gonna steal myself for it and then go back and watch it on DVD.
Well, I'll just tell you this. I won't give anything away. The last three episodes, they're all related. They're all one story.
Yeah.
And the conclusion of it, the last three episodes should really be like education for all television writers, for all those sorry drama shows like... You know, One Tree Hill.
I heard it was great. I heard the finale was like five stars. Yeah.
Yeah, they can all just bow down. That's how you write a cheesy drama right there.
Excellent. Thank you, sir.
You got it.
All right. Hi, Rick Emerson Show. Hello.
Hey, this is Tim from Portland. I'm calling about the statement you made earlier regarding Mallrats versus Empire Records. It sounded like you were casting a dispersion on Kevin Smith's classic comedy.
Just casting a dispersion, yes?
Yeah, do you really think Empire Records was the better choice for him? Because honestly, that was a two-hour tard fest.
Empire Records is one of those movies that I really loved when I was younger, and I watch it now, and I still try to love it, but it's kind of annoying.
Oh, no, it's a terrible
movie. No, tard fest. You know, potential future star quality aside, that movie was awful, and Mallrats was brilliant.
Yeah, that's exactly what Mallrats is. You know,
seriously, I mean, if you're going to make a 90s movie about something as trivial as, like, malls and relationships going wrong, you got to do it with that touch of, like, irony and tongue-in-cheek. And you got to admit the guy's writing is pretty intelligent.
Well, I will say this. Now, look, I'm a huge Kevin Smith fan. And, look, this is coming from someone who owns the Mallrats Special Edition DVD, okay?
Okay.
I own the Mallrats Collector's Edition DVD. So, and I will say this. Mallrats, here's what I'll say about Mallrats. Great idea, great try. Didn't really succeed, in my opinion. But I will say this. It is redeemed by the fact that the Mallrats DVD has one of the best movie commentaries I've ever heard, and the documentary about the rise and failure of Mallrats is worth the price of purchase alone. Because that's a movie that really got shafted by the studio. So,
The real problem is that, it's box office failure, which accompanies pretty much every Kevin Smith film.
That is true.
But you can't judge film's success based on the general American movie-going public. Let's face it, they appeal. The hard appeal to them more.
Well, and that is true, and that's why Studio 60 was canceled. Let me say this. I saw Mallrats opening weekend when it came out. I paid my hard-earned money to see Mallrats on the Saturday that it opened on Friday. I saw it on Saturday. Despite any critical, without any input from anybody, when I saw Mallrats opening weekend, I walked out and did not like it. I did not care for Mallrats when I saw it, and I saw Clerks in the theater several times.
I went on to love Chasing Amy. I've seen all. I own everything Kevin Smith has ever done. I own the Clerks animated series. I own the Evening with Kevin Smith DVD. I'm a huge Kevin Smith fan. I really am. I celebrate the guy's
entire catalog. Have at least a dozen good gut laughs during that film when you saw
it? I found Mallrats to be... I feel like... Can you believe that I'm having an argument with a guy over Mallrats? I never thought that I would live to see the day.
This is the
you don't understand. This film is ingrained in the psyche of me and about, I don't know, 150 other people that I've talked to. I talk to people on a daily basis about trivial, stupid topics like movies.
Welcome to my
particularly
world.
Particularly comedies. Uh-huh. Every day at work. And the general consensus is, Mallrats is hilarious, man. You can't deny it.
I will say, I've watched Mallrats probably 24 times. But almost always with the commentary on, because I find the commentary to be hilarious and a lot more entertaining than the actual film. That's all I'm going to say. So.
Okay, well, fair enough. But I think it doesn't get its due credit, man.
Well, that's probably true. But you say tomato, I say tomato. I mean, I paid for it. I watch it. I just I don't view it as being as funny in and of itself as perhaps.
Can we at least agree that it's better than Empire Freaking Records? Tartfest, I'm telling you.
All right, thank you.
Watch it again. Watch it again.
All right.
You're being kind of mean today.
I'm not being mean at all. There's no way out of that conversation. There's no good way out of that phone call. We have to break because we got Amanda Moyer coming up at the bottom of the hour. Amanda Moyer coming up. Lisa Goddard. Later on, Steve Katzenbaum, Tim Riley, and so forth. You stay there. It's the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Rick Emerson Radio Program live from Portland. It's 503-733-2970. Amanda Moyer coming up here in just a few minutes. Lisa Goddard going to be joining us as well. Later on, Steve Katzenbaum at the Nathan's World Famous Hot Dog Eating Contest, which I guess is what, tomorrow? So I guess we're doing...
tomorrow.
Yes, this is the calm before the storm today. The storm clouds are gathering. Ethan, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Do you have an answer to my computer monitor question? Does the light being on in the room affect whether it's easier to see the computer monitor or not?
Well, it kind of depends. All monitors do have a light to them, whether it's, you know, a flat panel monitor or a tube monitor.
This is a tube monitor we have at home.
Okay, yeah, we've had both. The problem is, if that is your only light source, it is flickering, you know, the refresh rate on
that.
Right,
right.
Some people's eyes are bothered by that, some are not. My eyes bug the crap out of me if I'm sitting there in the dark looking at the monitor. My wife... not affected by it at all.
So there's no definitive way to know whether the overhead light in the room being on or not affects whether the computer monitor is easier to look at?
Pretty much.
It's completely subjective.
Yep, it does have a light to it, so it is technically its own light source.
All right. Well, that's an unsatisfying answer, but I have no answer to compare it to.
I agree, it is unsatisfying, but that's all I got, buddy.
Let me ask you this. If I were to ask you right now, let's see how in touch you are with what's going on in the Van Halen world, only because this is one of those stories that I'll guarantee you no one can keep track of. Let me ask you this.
Okay.
Yes or no, is Van Halen reuniting for a tour or not?
Last I had heard they were, but... that changes by the day, last I heard.
Apparently they are. Well, they weren't as of like yesterday, but apparently they are again now.
Okay.
This is from Billboard. A proposed summer amphitheater tour by reunited Van Halen, which was derailed when guitarist Eddie Van Halen checked into rehab, which I don't even remember. I don't even know when that happened.
I don't think I ever even heard about that.
Sarah, you're the resident rehab expert.
Yeah, 2 months ago. He looks really good now.
I'm sorry. That sounded. I don't mean that you're a rehab expert. No, you follow the celebrity gossip. Does he look decent? Because, you know, he looked all bad.
Yeah, when he went in, he had all scraggly hair and no teeth. And now he looks a lot better.
Fantastic. All right, now apparently they may, in fact, be coming to town. So just, you know.
I'm not sure how I feel about that.
I don't really care. I gave up caring about 4 years ago.
I care about that about as much as I care about the reunited Guns N' Roses or whatever they call themselves nowadays.
Yeah, skip that, my friend. All right, thank you.
Thanks.
There you go. All right, it's 503-733-2970. This email says, Rick, are you only taking calls from douches today? Yeah, that does appear to be the case for the most part. Not only, but did the douche guy make his way into your book? I've come up with a punishment for getting into the book. Make them take part in a Tim Allen movie. Ha, 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 says Steve. Yeah, all right, thanks. Let's see. Hi, you're on the Rick Emerson Radio Program. What's up?
Hey, I've got a definitive answer for your monitor question.
All right, sir.
All right. It depends on if the light from the room is glaring off of the monitor glass. If it is, it's hard on your eyes.
We have a glare diffuser. We have this plastic screen that fits over the monitor that it effectively eliminates glare.
Okay. It's not really a big issue then. It doesn't really matter. When the lights are off, though, it's better to turn the monitor down so that your eyes adjust properly to the amount of light coming in. The darkness and the translucent to the bright light can make your eyes do weird things.
So you're saying all things being equal, though, it doesn't make a whole lot of difference?
Not really, no. It's just better to turn your monitor brightness down when the lights are dark.
All right, excellent. Thank you, sir.
Yep.
All right, there you go. Bless you. All right. It's 503-733-2970. Coming up in just a few minutes, we'll talk to CNN Radio correspondent Lisa Goddard. Let's welcome now to the Rick Emerson Show from CNN Radio Center in Atlanta, the one and only Amanda Moyer. Why, hello, Amanda. How are you today?
Hi, good. How are you?
I am dandy. I am dandy. I am dandy. Here's what the CNN Radio prep sheet says this morning. It says, I don't mean to make light of the situation, but it says, because there's the slug, as they say in journalism, or the headline, and then there's the description. The slug says, wrestler death indictment. And then right next to it, it says, Kobayashi has been the clear favorite in the Nathan's hot dog eating contest in years past, but this year may be different. So I'm guessing that that's a misprint and that the two probably don't even bear a passing relation to one another in terms of
news. They were all switched around this morning. I have no idea why it was like that, but I was like,
It's okay. You know what? I'm a professional, and I'm going to play through this pain here. We're going to move on ahead as though nothing was amiss. So what is the... So who... all I, and I didn't... I kind of have filed the Chris Benoit thing away in my head as something I'm not going to think about much anymore because really, what are you going to do? It just seems like all kinds of hideous and there's more gruesome details coming out of whatever. And I'm kind of ready to put the whole thing on a shelf in my head, but it does. The word indictment caught my eye, and so I wanted to know kind of what the latest was.
Well, there was a 7-count indictment, and basically, Chris Benoit's personal doctor has been charged with improperly prescribing drugs. However, it's not for him right now. This is for other patients that he's been prescribing drugs for illegally, as allegedly illegally.
Mm-hmm.
But right now they're saying that the investigation will go further and likely there will be charges involving him as well. But as of right now, those charges were not for Chris Benoit, but it was for other patients.
Now, is this one of those things where they probably knew this the whole time? In other words, he probably had been doing this for quite some while, and maybe they just didn't care enough about it to pursue it, but they need something to sort of pin him down into place on while they put together some case for the Chris Benoit prescriptions. And so this is a way to sort of put him in a jar and keep him there for a while they figure out how they're going to handle the larger issue?
Exactly. That's pretty much what's been going on. That's why they said that these drugs were dispersed between April of 2004 and September of 2005, and the initials that were on the prescribed drugs, they're not Chris Benoit's initials or his wife's or anyone related to that family, but this is a chance to, you know, this was happening, so this is a chance to get him look into this further and investigate what has been going on, because they do know that Dr. Astin did prescribe anabolic steroids to Chris Benoit, so they just don't know if that happened on June 22nd, which was the day he was actually there on June 22nd, but they don't know if anything was prescribed or what was prescribed, but June 22nd is the day that he killed his wife.
Hey, color me stupid, but I thought anabolic steroids were just illegal, period. I didn't think you could go into your doctor and get like a prescription for those.
I actually didn't know that either, but when I spoke with Scott Ballard, the district attorney in Fayetteville, he said that there's some forms are legal and you have to have different reasons for it, but in all honesty, I was like, well, what could be legal that he's a pro wrestler?
Right.
You know, if he's using steroids. I mean, if you look at it from that angle, why would he be doing that? But they said that there were some forms that can be legal, and that's what they released right away in that press conference, that anabolic steroids were found in the home. They wouldn't say where, but they said some of them were legal. So all coming from a company in Florida.
All right. CNN Radio correspondent Amanda Moyer at the CNN Radio Center in Atlanta. Thank you, Amanda.
Sure.
All right, there you go. Amanda Moyer, ladies and gentlemen. God bless you. All right. 503-733-2970. Now, I hate to ask an impolite question, but is it... There's no way to describe. There's no way to ask this question without making it sound like I was leering at Sarah's bra straps.
Oh my God.
Well, no, because you were walking back in, and I know the kids these days. You have like a tank top on, you have like a black wife beater, and then your bra straps are sort of to the side, like they're not covered. And I know that's
just
how the
like no, the back just goes in further to where you can see the bra straps because the bra straps aren't pushed out. That's
I know that's how the kids wear their clothing these days. It's, I understand that. It's, when I was growing up, that sort of thing was frowned upon, but I know that fashions change. All I'm saying is, I noticed that one of your bra straps is just hanging. That sounds so perverse. It's just hanging, really just hanging by a thread.
And I had no idea.
Your dog, you told me your dog chews through your bra straps, which is fantastic.
And I didn't know he did this one. I put it on today and I didn't notice.
Yeah.
And yeah, you're right. It's about ready to fall
apart.
Yeah,
be careful how you're shifting your seat because that thing's just going to snap. And then you're going to be, it's going to be all kinds of awkward.
Yeah.
And then you're walking around with a bra that's just torn down one side. Fantastic. Scotty, should I be, who, these, you know, hello. Scotty, see if you can guess what I'm thinking now. Thank you. All right, 503-733. I don't know if there's a light. I don't actually, if Scotty actually knows when the phone rings. We have to hook up some sort of electroshock system in there, so when the phone actually rings or sitting on hold, that it, I don't know, it electrifies his scrotum or something, so that he knows. All right, well, we got Lisa Goddard coming up. I got these calls about the airplane window thing. I got this. Well, let me read this about Studio 60, which, again, I have not seen the finale. And it is not like, I don't think he kills everybody in the finale, but it doesn't matter. I mean, it's not like, I just, I'd rather not know anything about it, because I'm gonna get the whole series on DVD and then watch it. This says, Rick, is it great that Sorkin had the big brass ones to name the last episode of Studio 60? What kind of day has it been? Now, I don't know what this guy's referring to in the email, but I will tell you, I suspect he's referring to the same thing I am, which is that Sorkin has called two previous finales, What Kind of Day Has It Been? God, I'm a nerd. The first season finale of Sports Night was called What Kind of Day Has It Been? And the first season finale of West Wing was called What Kind of Day Has It Been? Which is where Bartlett gets shot. So there is a phenomenon on the internets, on the interwebs, called the Aaron Sorkin recycling syndrome. And there are actually whole web pages set up by people like myself. There are whole web pages set up that cross-reference recurring themes, phrases, names, elements, and plot developments in all of the different Aaron Sorkin series. And there are all kinds of things that get replicated from one Aaron Sorkin series to another. He does recycle a lot of plot elements. He recycles a lot of names, a lot of phrases, a lot of whatever. And that What Kind of Day Has It Been is one of those things. So I'm assuming that's what this guy's referring to. And finally, before we take Lisa Goddard, this email says about Mallrats. Rick, I should have known that Mallrats would, that it would just be like pricking some balloon with this audience.
Mm-hmm.
Hello, Rick. How can you not appreciate a gratuitous shot of Priscilla Barnes from of her extra nipple? That's she's Terry from Three's Company. She's a fortune teller who has a third nipple. He says, oh, this one digs in. He says, you must have been a Janet man. No, it's a fine. I mean, you know what? Mallrats is a great idea for a movie. It's a great idea, badly executed, in my opinion. His reach exceeded his grasp, or grasp exceeded his reach. One of those things. Didn't really come off the way he wanted it to, but I admire what he was trying to do. I will say this finally about Mallrats, that if Mallrats had come out about, because that was, what, like 95? If Mallrats had come out, I don't know, maybe 5 years later, it would have been a big hit, probably. It was just too soon, and it was kind of a gratuitous sort of raunchy sex comedy. And those were not in vogue at the time, 95, 96. A lot of movies kind of fell through the cracks, just like records that came out at that time that fell through the cracks. They never got their due. You know, you flash forward to like American Pie and Something About Mary, and sort of the sex comedy made its triumphant reemergence as part of the American cinematic experience. In the mid-90s, though, the sex comedy was considered dead and buried, especially the teen sex comedy, which is why one of the reasons why Mallrats was overlooked. Man, this is not very good. Let's welcome now to the Rick Emerson Show, From the Hill! Correspondent of the stars, the one and only Lisa Goddard. Why, hello there.
Well, hello you.
How are things on this Tuesday? I keep calling it Wednesday. How are things on Tuesday for you?
Tuesday over on this side of the country is doing A-okay.
So there's a whole lot to get to here. Here's something the Republicans are probably right about. Probably no one in America really understands, and I'm not even going to say that I'm the exception to this, because I only kind of understand it, the Lewis Scooter Libby case.
Okay.
Scooter Libby, who was a White House aide, who was, correct me if I'm wrong, was he not convicted of, I don't think the actual charge was obstructing justice, but he was certainly convicted of obstructing an investigation by the government, right?
It was obstruction of justice.
All right, and so he's
not
now...
Not perjury.
So, and perjury. Apparently these are now just sort of, you know, sort of everybody does it. Just sort of a youthful mistake that people make. Obstruction of justice.
New cocaine.
Yeah, exactly. The, and so... He has, be very careful about this, he's not been pardoned, which means it's still on his record. He is still a convicted felon.
That's right.
Which I guess means there's a radio program waiting for him at some point in the future. But he has had his sentence commuted, which means now that Paris Hilton will have spent more time in jail than a guy who's been convicted of obstructing a government investigation.
That is the big comparison.
Fantastic.
This is the Paris Hilton of the Bush White House.
Seriously, yes. But he's not even there. Paris Hilton ended up doing time.
That would be a difference. It's true.
So
he does have a larger fine than Paris Hilton had to pay.
You know what? The idea of a government official being punished by having to pay a fine—that's when they try to fine like a lot of the paper companies that operate in the Northwest for dumping, you know, like iodine into the river for 50 years by fining them $1,500 a day or something, which is just minuscule. This has nothing to do with partisanship. It just seems like a bad political move. It's like just the Bush administration just figured that his popularity is so low it can't even reach some sort of granite layer where it can't possibly descend any further. And so why not just start handing out favors?
There is that school of thought for sure. There are people who say that how could this affect him? His rating is so low. What's it going to go down? 5 points? Oh, big deal. But I think that honestly, none of us really know why the president did that, what he was thinking in his heart of hearts, as they like to say. But it does seem to me that I suspect that the president thought this was the right thing to do, either convinced himself it was the right thing to do, depending on your perspective, or believed it was the right thing to do, depending on how you want to look at it.
All right. And I hate to put you in an awkward position by asking you to peer inside the...
What I'm here for.
To peer inside the psyche of George W. Bush, which is a sort of... funhouse mirror kind of place, I would imagine. But there's no contention about Scooter Libby's conviction. In other words, it's not like somebody's saying he was railroaded. I mean, the facts...
Well, even the president, in his statement, the president said that he respected the jury's decision.
I mean, there's no contention that the guy was railroaded. I mean, he was convicted of obstruction of justice and perjury. And so, in what possible justification do you suppose there is for saying that this was an unfair sentence? I mean, was there any further explanation given? It just seems really, really blatant.
The president is not on his own in thinking this, but everyone who believes this, who supports that view, is a conservative Republican. But there are many. He's not the only one who believes that, and that's based on the fact that the recommended sentence for Scooter Libby, I believe it was something around 27 months, or that was the deal that the parole board was recommending in this case, and the judge actually increased that to 30 months, and now 30 months is still within the sentence guidelines for these convictions, but it's on the high end. And the prosecutor in this case asked for something on the high end, though the prosecutor was ready and had agreed to something lower. And so what the president and others have said is, you know, why was this pushed up? You know, this is, it, in a way, it almost is the Paris Hilton argument, saying that he had to pay more because of this sort of political celebrity status than he would have otherwise. Now, again, there is a group of people making that argument, but there are many more who, like you, say, give me a break. This is obstruction of justice, is the sentence he got. And, you know, how come he doesn't have to live with it? Why do others have to live with it? And the president really didn't talk about... He put a lot of detail into the statement about the case itself, but he never questioned the verdict. In fact, the president in that statement said he respected the verdict, as we said. So who knows? But then again, in just the last 2 hours, the president made an appearance at the Pentagon, and he told reporters, asked him, have you ruled out a pardon? And the president said, I haven't ruled anything in or out.
Well, that sort of seems to be, I wouldn't read anything into that, because that just sort of seems
that's
to be...
That's what I think, too.
That's Bush's stock response. That's like when they ask him if he's thought about launching nuclear weapons against Iran, and he goes, well, everything's on the table. You know, it's just, that's just one of his... I suspect that's what he says when he doesn't really know what the hell he's talking about.
I think you might be right, and I think they're making a huge deal out of it. Oh, the president might pardon Scooter Libby. I don't know. In that same statement, he said, I think that, essentially, my decision in the end was that the verdict you know, should be upheld, and that's what I believe. You know, but I think you're right. I think that's the game in Washington and anywhere on the campaign trail. You know, if you can say nothing, say nothing.
By the way, you'll be curious to know that on the you'd like to know that on the CNN prep sheet today, it says that you're talking in some depth about Chris Benoit's doctor and the prescribing of anabolic steroids.
Just oh, I am? Me?
Right next to your name, Lisa Goddard.
No, I didn't. You're kidding me, really?
Lisa Goddard is available for the following stories. Chris Benoit's doctor has been charged with improperly prescribing drugs.
Well, let's see what I got.
No, it's fine. I'm already up to speed with it. I just thought you might like to know. I don't wish for you to be blindsided by...
I have to say about that.
Else. All right.
That's fascinating. Yeah, this week is crazy, guys. I gotta say, it's really, it's nutty, because I'm juggling, TV wants me to do a story. Glenn Beck, I guess, is doing on the Palazan show, and sorry, this is all inside baseball. I'm sorry for everything.
Glenn Beck is a crazy man, by the way, just so you know.
But it's really, TV wants me to do this story, but of course radio doesn't want to give me time off, and we're just, all these crazy stories for this week that's supposed to be slow, and it's just nutty.
If I can just clarify this. So when you say that the TV guys want you now, is this on the Paula Zahn show on which Glenn Beck is filling in?
That is correct.
All right. So here's the thing about Glenn Beck. Here's the thing you ought to know, and I think Keith
Good.
Olbermann actually put this very succinctly. Glenn Beck seems to be sort of reasonably competent at what he does, mm-hmm. and he doesn't seem to be horrifically unattractive. So therefore, he managed to land himself. Like everybody who's reasonably. You know, no one ever says somebody is apt. They only say someone is inept. That's an interesting thing. So Glenn Beck seems to be reasonably apt at his profession of choice and right. doesn't have any visible scars or disfigurements, and so therefore he has a television gig, as everybody with those qualifications eventually, you know, is given. But I do get the feeling that one of these days on camera he's going to say something that's just going to get him tarred and feathered and kicked into the Atlantic Ocean. I know that Keith Olbermann shares that assessment, too, that one of these days Glenn Beck is going to process his thoughts one time too few, and he's going to say something on television that's going to end his career forever. Do you just mark my word?
I will take your words, and I will mark them.
So maybe you'll be there when it happens. You can always, you know what I mean?
Possible. Yeah, I don't know. I think my part is completely taped. I think I just give it to him. It airs Friday night. Boom.
All right.
We'll see if I actually finish it. These people are writing me. I have no idea what I'm doing. You know, I know how to write a story and everything, but I don't know camera crews, all this stuff, and the person they gave to help me is a very sweet girl, but she's an intern who doesn't know how to log tapes, and it's really a hilarious situation.
Now, when is this airing? When will people be able to watch this?
Friday night.
I'm penciling it in right now. I'm going to TiVo.
Oh, come on. It's Friday night after all.
No, I have no life. What am I going to do? All right, excellent. And we will be talking to you tomorrow on the 4th of July.
That's correct. I will be here.
Excellent. All right. Enjoy the rest of your day, and don't stress out about Glenn Beck. He's a punk.
All right. I don't know. I'm feeling like I can't. I don't know. There's a lot going on this week.
I'm trying to give you the fighter's edge. I'm trying to give you a little positive reinforcement.
Okay, that's what I need.
Yeah, no pressure. Don't worry about it. All right. We'll talk to you tomorrow, Lisa.
Okay. See ya.
There you go. Lisa Goddard, ladies and gentlemen. Fantastic. Glenn Beck, it's everybody with a microphone eventually is given. I mean, it probably at some point they'll just come in here with a camera crew and put us on CNBC for a year or so. Doesn't matter. You don't really have to be any good. Sort of like Cato Kaelin getting that show in KLSX years ago. And then Daryl Gates. God, well, I know I'm dating myself here, but I remember when Daryl Gates, who was the LAPD, he got bounced out of the LAPD gig and they gave him Lycus a slot on KFI. What a strange industry this is. And by strange, I mean retarded. All right, 503-733-2970. We should break here. We'll come back. Tim Riley at the Ministry of Truth with the Noon News Hour. Things are back to normal, aren't they? It's 503-733-2970. You say there's a Rick Emerson Show.
The incredible, I'm animal, the uncannibal, public enemy number one, 503, and I got...
Emerson Radio Program. It's 503-733-2970. 503-733-2970. Coming up later on, CNN Radio correspondent Steve Kastenbaum, who is there at Nathan's Famous Hot Dogs, or World Famous Hot Dogs. I'm confusing that with like the Ray's Famous, original Ray's Famous, Ray's thing. Well, whatever. We'll talk about the Kobayashi gun and so forth. It's 503-733-2970, plus more of your calls on the way. Ladies and gentlemen, please make way for the Reverend Tim Riley.
Time for the Rick Emerson Noon News Hour from AM 970 Solid State Radio. And now, from the Ministry of Truth, this is Tim Riley.
State Police are conducting an internal investigation into the circumstances surrounding that call to 911. Several of them, as a matter of fact, on June 8th, reporting the crash of a car driven by a California priest and his lady friend. Responding cops are unable to find the vehicle and left the scene. Then on July 1st, the vehicle was found at the originally reported location with the priest and the lady dead inside. So what happened is, they had a record of all these phone calls, and everyone was passing the buck as to who was going to go out there. So here's the original phone call.
Was it a lot of like, my feet are all propped up on this desk. Like, I don't want to...
Well, we're really not sure. But anyway, here is a whole bunch of these phone calls that led to absolutely nothing going on. Let's see here. Okay, it's buffering.
911, you need police, fire, or medical?
Police.
What's the problem?
I want to report an accident.
What's
on Highway 26.
Milepost?
It's about a quarter mile west of milepost 26.
So they know exactly where it is.
On the north side of the highway.
I don't know if anyone's hurt.
I don't know. I saw the car just drive straight off the road into the bush.
Quarter mile west of Highway 26.
They're on the north. They were headed east, and they veered across the oncoming lane.
Did you see this happen?
Yeah.
One car only?
One car only. They were headed eastbound.
Did they go off the road or
hit? You can't even see them from the roadway.
You know what kind of vehicle it was?
It was a compact red. I'm not sure. It's some sort of a compact import red.
You don't know if anybody's hurt?
No, I just want to...
Let me just delay this call as long as possible.
And what is your name?
Doug.
Okay.
Now we have a phone, maybe.
So now he's trying to call somebody else again. Now, they know it just happened and where it happened. They have the exact location.
Hi, it's Dispatch Washington County. Do you all have the accident, Highway 26, vicinity, milepost 26?
Highway 26, milepost 26. No, I don't. Have you given that to OSP?
That's not my department.
We'll give it to them.
Local 32.
Be aware of it as well. And do you guys do medical from that side?
Highway 26, milepost 26.
I know our cutoff point's about milepost 33. We'll start up from this end if you'd like us to.
Okay. Well, let me just double test the jurisdiction on that. I'm not off the top of my head. I just don't know.
In the meantime, the occupants are bleeding to death.
Nice. Hemorrhaging internally in the meantime.
DC side.
Okay.
And it needs to be dispatched, so we don't dispatch for them.
They don't do that.
Do you need the number for...
Yeah, go ahead with it.
Yeah, what's the number?
Hi, this is Dispatch Washington County.
Hey there.
Do y'all have the accident, milepost 26 on 26?
That's ridiculous. We're only halfway through this.
Not going to be ours.
For medical?
No, if it's going to be Astoria Dispatch.
I just talked to them. They said it was yours.
Milepost 26 on 26?
That's correct.
Well, I'm going to go to 14, so I'm afraid that...
I'll call him back.
Sorry.
You don't do
Bye.
That.
Bye.
Sorry. This is like trying to get somebody at my insurance company to help me schedule a shrink appointment. I'm sorry, you dialed the wrong number.
I tried calling someone else while they're bleeding to death.
If you're bleeding to death in a ditch, please press 1.
And we know exactly where you are.
State Police, this is Rick. Can I help you?
Hi, Rick. This is Bruce. Working fire dispatch, Washington County.
Hey, are you guys
going to have
a single vehicle off the road, milepost 26 on 26?
Hello?
Milepost 26
hold on. Hold on. I'm microwaving a stromboli.
Hey. The over. Which 26 side? West towards the beach. Okay, we're starting medical. I did notify Astoria Dispatch.
Well done.
I did notify Seaside Dispatch. They were arguing over who's jurisdiction.
They were arguing. It's all their fault.
I told them, well, here's your info. You guys deal with it. We'll send a
vehicle off-road, unknown injury, medics are out.
Described as a compact red car, and it was eastbound, and the caller said it was not visible from the roadway.
Of course, that was a year ago by now, so it could have changed.
Okay, I'll put it in.
All right,
I'll put it through our system.
If you'd like that.
That was my...
Jesus.
He's not done yet.
Of course not.
Tom?
Hey, we don't go to Mount Post 26.
Oh, for the love of God.
Clatsop County, and they say it's not theirs, and we said it's yours, you need to go. And
it's Elsie's call. It's well inside their district.
Okay.
Patch me through to Clatsop County.
All right.
He's whistling.
We just
whistling in the background.
Don't go on from our side too, because.
Hello,
hello,
Central. This is not trying to get American Dream to deliver past Powell on a weekend.
I'm sorry, dispatch.
Hey there, this is Washington County.
Hello.
Hi. I have a time. She wants to talk to you. Dispatch. Okay, Levi, they're on the phone.
Hi, Clatsop County Dispatch.
Well, this is, yeah.
Hi, this is Levi with Thanks Fire.
I'm sorry, I was just watching my stories. Is it buffering or something? I can't tell what they're with the buffering and what's just their slack.
Hi there.
Hi, was engine 14 tapped on the MVA just now on Timber Road? Or?
No, we have a station.
Did you ever do anything about that bleeding guy?
You know, out of our jurisdiction, but the other agency said that it wasn't there. This mop was 26. Do you want to put 14 on it?
I don't know if I'm qualified to do that. I can always go up and get the engine.
For the love of God.
Well, we're calling everybody and seeing what's going on, and I'll tap you guys if I need to.
Yeah, okay.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Okay. Well, there you go. They weren't saved.
They were not saved.
They were not rescued.
They were found dead on July 1st.
The original call went out on June 8th. Your tax dollars at work, ladies and gentlemen. For the love of sweet God.
They knew exactly where they were.
Jesus. They knew where they were, where they went off the road, what kind of car they were
driving.
Somebody
called right away.
Some guy who was there at the beginning was like, hey, here's exactly where I am. Here's the kind of car. Here's the accident. I'm right here.
It happened on June 8th.
They were found when?
July 1st.
That's just top flight police work is what that is. That's top-notch governmental assistance.
Now we know where all the weekend board ops went to work.
Seriously. All those guys have probably been promoted by now.
So I don't know what else to say about this. I think it's pretty well self-explanatory.
Really? What are you going to do? Oh, all that was missing there was being put on hold for long stretches of time while a girl from Ipanema played on the oboe.
Mm-hmm.
Jesus. Yeah, Scotty has really nailed this. The moral of the story is, don't ever break down or have your car crash anywhere in the mountainous regions of Oregon or Washington because you will die.
Well, this is Highway 26.
But I mean,
it is a highway.
I mean, now where? Highway 26 going through where?
It's a quarter mile west of milepost 26.
Oh, Jesus. God
damn. So it's the road to the beach, basically.
And like 1,000 people. I don't mean to make light of it. They're dead. It doesn't matter. Probably 1,000 people drove by them. Probably cops drove by them.
Well, the thing is, they knew exactly where they were the moment it happened because it was somebody driving and saw it.
All right. Well, so there you go.
So
fantastic.
I don't know what else to say about it, really.
This is like those union nightmares you always hear about. There's some guy trying to change a light bulb, but there's like four different people. You have to call another. I'm sorry. I can only unscrew the light bulb. I can't actually carry it to the trash can.
We used to have a light bulb man at the old Fisher Building.
Yeah, we did.
Building?
Exactly.
That guy's job was to change a light bulb.
Exactly. Because nobody else was allowed to do it.
All right. And he used to cheap dolly store once to make sure he had a job.
Right next to his dollar store meat. Hi, you're on the Rick Emerson Show.
Yeah, I'm just wondering why the guy that reported the wreck didn't even think about maybe driving back there and checking it out.
Oh, right. Well,
he figured that the police would do it.
I mean, but seriously, if you call 911 and you tell, you call 911 and you say, hey, look, here's the wreck, here's the car, here's the whatever, and 911 is like, thanks, we're on it. I mean, usually that's the end of the story. You figure 911's going to come and do their gig.
It's out in the middle of nowhere. Like, there's not a lot of people around. I would think, oh, my gosh, I better just go drive back and just take a gander real quick and see if somebody's going to see how they are, they're okay.
Although, from the sound of the call, he said you couldn't even see the car. So, from the sound of the call, they went off. His description makes it sound like the car went off and then plummeted down like a big long, like a deep ravine or something. Yeah. It doesn't sound like it. He said you couldn't even see the car from the road.
Still terrible. I mean, I don't blame the guy for the brother for being irate.
Yeah. No. Yeah. You think? Yeah. If you listen really, carefully, you can hear the rustling of a massive class action suit being filed against the city by everybody, or even remotely involved with this couple. So, all right.
Thanks.
Thank you. Bye now. Seriously. All right.
You know, here's the thing I wonder about. Have they changed the system with 911 and your cell phone? Like, if I dial my...
I've never dialed it.
If I'm on my cell phone, because I got nationwide service, I think, for the most part, I guess.
Yeah,
I don't really know. But if I'm in, like, I don't know, Nevada, and I dial 911, does that ring here in Portland?
I would imagine so.
Well, that's no help.
I'm sure. Don't you pay some kind of tax for that?
You mean me personally or
service
us?
Service charge on your bill.
I for what?
The 911 service.
I don't believe so. In fact, I thought the 911 service was I thought that was part of the governmental phone infrastructure. Because here's a little note back.
What
meaning that, like, isn't that part of our taxes that we pay as a people to support the 911 system in America? Isn't the 911 system just like a government service that we pay into?
It's not
a phone company service,
no.
Is it?
No.
Because did you know, here's a little known fact. Do you know if you have a cell phone that is charged, even if you don't have a carrier, in other words, even if the phone's been in your closet for 10 years and you don't use it, as long as the power works, it is a law that if you dial 911, it has to work. It has to connect to something. It is a law. Your cell phone, even if you do not currently have cell service from a company, your cell phone must connect to 911 when it's dialed. That's actually a law. But my question is, if I'm a Portland guy and I have a phone here and then I take it to Nevada and I'm bleeding on the side of the road in Nevada and I dial 911, just like a ring in Multnomah County.
I don't know.
Because that's going to be no help.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm just, I'm going to be like these guys. So, all right. Well, there you go. Yeah, really, the only thing that would have made that better, there's several people who said this now, the only thing that would have made that better is if the popcorn music had just been playing in the background.
Oh, that's true.
Yeah. Jesus. All right, let's see here. Hi, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hello.
Yeah, you know, that story's been over the news for the last month, and all those people, I don't know what they do with their free time, but you'd think they would have heard a story about that car's description missing.
Well, yeah, but I mean, I guess nobody could see the car, I guess, is my point.
Well, but the guy that called in, he called and said it was a red import, and it went off the mile, off the road here, and then those people, they would have, or at least the first guy, if he saw the news and he said, oh, there's a red import missing, you would think that...
Well, he didn't sound overly concerned about the whole thing, so I don't really
know.
That's
why the state police are now conducting an internal investigation.
Yeah. Nobody on that chain of command really seemed like they were really, really into going and finding the car. So I don't really know that watching the news would have triggered any sort of like, oh, I got to go back to work and do some overtime reflex on this, you know?
And the other thing is, the OSP has been shorthanded for a long, long time now. I mean, they'll have like one cop car, you know, for like a 70-mile radius.
Totally. Well, didn't we hear at one point after 9/11 they revealed that there was one... Well, in fact, I think Michael Moore highlighted this in Fahrenheit 9/11. There's one guy who patrols the entire Oregon coast. There's like one anti-terror cop who patrols the entire coastline of Oregon.
So why wouldn't they forget, really?
All right. Yeah.
Wow. Fantastic.
All right. There you go, sir. Don't worry about that over the holiday weekend when you're driving with your family.
Oh, definitely not.
Whatever you do, don't worry about that. All right. Let's see here. Scotty is just casting all kinds. I don't understand this. Scotty is casting all kinds of aspersions of the guy who made the 911 call. Scotty. This is Scotty saying this, by the way, not myself. This is Scotty's opinion. Scotty is saying, how come he didn't help? I bet he caused the crash, says Scotty. That is not our belief. That is the opinion of Scotty J. And that is only his editorial opinion, not the opinion of anyone on this in this room here or our sponsors. Hi, you're on the Rick Emerson Show.
Hey, Rick.
What's up? What do you got, brother?
Well, I was thinking that guy, probably the guy that actually saw the car leave the road, probably had to drive for a few miles to hit a cell tower.
That's true, because it probably doesn't work well up in the mountain range anyway.
Right. And so, Scotty, remember the family that got lost last year and they found him on the dead-end road? Well, Scotty was mad because the guy walked the other way.
Yeah, yeah. Scotty was all angry at the Korean guy, yeah.
Yeah, down in California, out in the middle of nowhere, or on, like, really long bridges, they have call boxes. And so if you pick that up, that's hardwired to the cops, and they can say, oh, the guy's at milepost 15.8.
Well, and I'm looking here to see, there's some little stuff about this here, but yeah, I remember going to see When my brother got married, I had to go to his marriage, whatever the place is, some lodge up in the mountains, and it was only like 20 miles away from here. But I got high enough up in the mountains that my phone wouldn't work at all. My phone didn't work. My GPS didn't work. I mean, like, nothing worked.
Right. So. And you're right. You got to be able to hit a cell tower in order to get 911, even if you don't have a cell phone carrier. But yeah, down in California, out in the middle of the nowhere on the highways, where you would actually need something like that, they actually have it. And I've never seen anything like that in Oregon or Washington.
No. Right. All right, thank you, sir.
Yep.
Scott, I'm looking at the street. Scotty's just enraged about this guy. Scotty, come into the studio, please. I'm not going to play the sound. Let's get these two calls here in a second. These are non-related, but let's get these really quickly. Joe, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hello.
Yeah, hey, that's an inside look at government-ran health care, too, by the way.
Yeah, real. Yeah. Yeah, because the service I pay for is so much better. Go ahead.
Glenn Beck, I don't know if he still does, but he used to have a radio show.
Yes.
And they were talking about him being in, he was having some mental problems at one point, and he said, you want to talk about crazy? He said, I didn't go into my kitchen for 2 years because I thought my kitchen knife were talking to
him. Well, I think, now, I don't know that this is true, but I think Glenn Beck is the guy, and I may be wrong about this, but I don't think I am. I think Glenn Beck is the guy who said, and I'm quoting now, white people need to start having more babies. I'm pretty sure that's him. So there you go. Look inside that guy's head.
And, hey, for a quick callback, you remember Goldberg? You were talking about Goldberg saying he was a guy covering. He's actually a Jewish guy.
Goldberg? From, really? I'm stunned. I'm amazed.
Dude. And you take, I mean, he's like a freaking animal.
Hold on a second, sir. Tim, a guy named Goldberg is Jewish. Oh,
yeah. I watched a biography on him, and he's got this little old Jewish mother, and she showed high school pictures.
Wait, hold on. He's Jewish, and his mother is Jewish, too?
Yeah, crazy, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
But he's this spindly little Jewish guy in high school, and then all of a sudden he blew up and turned into this freaking 6'6", 280-pound freaking monster. He played pro ball for the Atlanta Falcons, even.
Yes. Thank you, sir.
Yeah. Oh, hey. Adios.
Okay. Like a land speed record for how many times we can use the word Jewish in a phone call. Scotty J, hello.
Good morning, you hot.
Stop doing that. Is this... This is like, you missed it yesterday when, Tim, with Scotty was trying to, every time he opened the mic, he was like, good morning, Cornelius. Good morning, Yakult. Like, I think it's a new catchphrase he's trying to,
it's not working.
It's his new trademark, apparently. He's trying to plant his flag a little
bit. Sounds very trendy.
All right, we got this criminal defense attorney. What is she on hold about, Scooter Libby?
Yes.
Okay, well, we'll get that here in a second. And then all these people are calling about this 911 call. Now, I want to say that whatever Scotty's about to say does not represent the opinion of CBS Radio, Sarah, Tim, myself, any of our staff, management, advertisers, successors, or assigns. This is Scotty's opinion only, but you've been typing all these angry, like, it's like all caps, like 1,000 exclamation marks. Go ahead.
Yes, here's the deal. I was in the Boy Scouts. I got my first aid badge or whatever the heck it is. First thing you do, if someone crashes off the road, you don't just do 80 to a phone somewhere, okay? You stop and you try to find out if anyone's hurt. Maybe they don't need help. Maybe they...
He couldn't even see the car. He didn't even know where the car was. He couldn't find the car. He said on the 911 call he didn't know where the car was.
Well,
he knew where it went off the road, but he couldn't see the car. It was in, like, the forest somewhere.
Now, was this in the nighttime, or does anybody know?
Does it say, Tim?
It does not.
It doesn't say, but regardless, I mean, he didn't know where the car was.
All right, well...
It was in the afternoon, it says here.
Anyway, he's kind of insisting on making it sinister.
At that point, I would have looked a little bit. But secondly...
He looked! He couldn't find the car!
Okay. Then he went to go to a phone, and then he just disappeared. They can't find the guy. Nor did he go back to search
for
him.
Like he's laminate somewhere. Like he's holed up somewhere, like on the east side of Chicago.
Mm-hmm. It leads me to believe, you know, something sinister. And, you know, this could be true or false, but maybe the guy should come forward and tell us his story. But here's the story.
What's your angle, mister?
He caused the crash.
That's Scotty saying that, by the way. That is not me saying that.
If he wants to come forward and tell us, no, I didn't cause the crash, great. Because we want.
What evidence do you have that he caused the crash?
I have no evidence, but maybe he should come forward and tell us what happened. And why he left and why he didn't go
out. He explained what happened.
He explained what he saw.
He said the car off the road. I'm late for a dinner appointment.
I don't really know. I think that may be an incorrect reading of the text. I think that may be a drastic revision of the call. Because cars never go off the road. That just never happens.
Well, it's, you know, it's possible that...
If he caused the accident, why would he call 911 in the first place?
Because he felt guilty. And then he up and moved to Mexico, and that's why he's not listening to the Rick Emerson program. Hello, Puerto Rico.
Sorry,
that's not working.
How do you feel this segment has gone for you?
That's all right.
Okay. Bye now. Hi, Jim. You're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hello.
Hi, Rick. How you doing?
Scotty,
you make me so angry. Though I do kind of agree with him a little bit. First off, I can't quote the statute exactly, but the Oregon State law, if you come upon a vehicle accident, you're supposed to stop and you're supposed to render aid if possible. Now, granted, maybe the guy couldn't get a cell phone, but I do know that emergency personnel, what they want is somebody to stay at the scene and point them at least in the right direction. And I think that guy saying, the key phrase to me is, when he said it went off the road, you can't see the car, I think at that point it should have obligated him to at least come back to the scene if he left the scene and be able to point to the police where he thought the car went off.
Let me say this. I'm just saying here. Now, do we know he didn't do that? Because keep in mind, he made this phone call on June 8th, and the authorities got there July 1st.
Well, what the story indicated to me in the paper was that the police showed up at that mile marker that he indicated, mile marker 26, and they were unable to find the vehicle. Two different police agencies responded, and they did a search, and they were unable to find the vehicle. So I would say there's probably like an absence of skid marks. But even think about it, if you have to search a mile road, actually it would be 2 miles, on each side of the mile marker to search a rural road that's heavily covered in brush where a car went off the road. I mean, I kind of can see where the police were unable to find it. What I can't see is why this gentleman who saw the car leave the road and admitted on the 911 call that you can't see where the car went off the road, that he was kind of obligated to remain there and at least give them an idea of where the car went off the road so that they didn't think it was either like, you know, a hoax.
Do we know how long after his call the cops showed up?
Immediately. They were dispatched. According to my great source, the Oregonian, they sent two different Washington County and Oregon State police showed up.
But then what is the deal with this, like, nine-hour series of phone calls that we just played?
Well, that was like, you know, I mean, that's happening quickly, though. That's where they're just passing the buck back and forth. That probably happened within, a few minutes. That was probably almost real time as far as, you know, them calling one 9/11 center, being passed to another, blah, blah, blah. But again, the point comes back to is if this gentleman had remained at the scene and said, hey, it's somewhere here, I think that, A, they would have got more people out there to search, and B, they could have very much narrowed down the search area. Because if you look at all these things that have happened in the past few months in Portland with lost people, they really don't have a precise area to begin the search. They have to begin these wide searches. And if that guy could have stayed at the scene and said, hey, I think it's somewhere here within, like, even if we say within 100 yards versus a mile,
right,
I think they would have found these people. And right, there's culpability on everyone's part, but I think it does say in the Motor Vehicle Code, if you come upon a vehicle accident, you must remain at the scene and render aid if possible. And even if that means pointing to emergency personnel saying, over here.
All right.
Okay, hey, happy 4th of July.
All right, thank you.
Total online automotive resource.
Okay, that's not me.
Your online experience to be different.
Thank God Tim is back. All right, let's get, well, it's just lots of calls about this. Hello, Rick Emerson Show.
Yeah, unfortunately, and I hate saying this, a local newsroom actually shares Scotty's opinion about this guy. Yeah, absolutely.
Can you imagine how much crap we'll have to eat if it turns out Scotty is right about this?
Well, the thing is, the guy didn't stay at the scene, and he gave very generic directions to the 911 operator.
I see some trees nearby.
Well, exactly, but what road it was, I think it's over here, you know. But anyway, yeah, he unfortunately... God is not alone in his opinion.
Oh, great. Wonderful.
Well, sorry about that.
All right. Thank you, sir.
Bye.
Scotty is typing on the screen that, quote, I'm smarter than you all think. You would almost have to be. I mean, hi. Okay, we're going to have just a little bit of a callback here. Hi, Edie. You're in the Rick Emerson Show.
Hello.
Hey, what's up? Sorry you've been holding there. We're on this auto wreck thing. What's up?
Oh, that's that's okay. I tuned in at the tail end of the scooter Libby conversation, and yeah. I just wanted to say that under federal guidelines and Oregon state guidelines, the reason they have sentencing guidelines is so that people will be punished fairly. Everyone's judged the same. And so everything, all the decisions that were made about Scooter Libby were based on the crime, his prior history. The judge doesn't have a lot of discretion to do much more. So what Bush is saying is totally crap. He was sentenced or would have been sentenced according to what the law is and how everyone else would be judged. I've never heard of a case of someone being having their sentence commuted for obstruction of judgment. It's a really serious charge, and I mean, it's so blatant, I guess, is what I'm trying to say.
Oh, no, it's unbelievably. You almost have to admire how perversely blatant it is. I mean, and he's doing it, of course, into the holiday news cycle, which means that it'll be lost in the flurry of 4th of July stories.
Right, of course. I mean, there is nothing even, and I'm a Democrat, but I would say I'm pretty open. I'm not, like, always yes or no, you know, Republican Democrat, but I can't think of anything he can say that could make any sense about this. It is so blatant and so offensive that, you know, it's just another thing where I'm like, yeah, it's Bush and his people.
No, he'll go stand on a pile of rubble somewhere and say 9/11.
Yeah, exactly. Terror. Say terrorism.
Exactly. All right, thank you, Edie.
Okay, bye-bye.
All right, there you go. That's Edie. All right, let's do one more here, and then we'll take a break and continue on with Scotty J's nefarious theories about the caller. Hello.
Yeah, Rick, your question about when you call 911 when you're traveling.
Yes.
Yeah, that happened to me. I was like over in on the coast, Washington, over in Long Beach, Washington. Uh-huh. Had to call 911. I called 911. The thing is, though, they answered the phone in Astoria. So the Astoria Police Department lifted up the phone and said, how can I help you? And they're like across the bay.
So there's like a GPS or something in your phone that must link you to the nearest tower?
No, it's whichever tower is, whichever tower you end up transmitting from, that's the closest police department gets the call. Now, the problem is, I was in Washington, but the closest tower was in Oregon.
Yeah, so you would have been screwed like this guy, where they would have passed it back and forth like some sort
of they did.
Emergency
they
or hot potato. Yeah.
They were very good about it. They said, they got on the phone right then and called, you know, the proper police department and transferred it over.
All right, excellent. Thank you, sir.
Yeah, bye.
There you go. All right.
So, in case anyone's a state trooper from Astoria who was patrolling near milepost 13, arrived near milepost 25, and checked both sides of the highway until reaching milepost 27. So, the milepost reported was 26. He then turned around and made two more passes through the two-mile stretch, driving slowly to look for a car. He got out and checked some of the locations east of milepost 26.
Well, even though the guy who called 911 said you couldn't see the car.
Right.
So idling by in your cop car is right. Probably not going to be the most efficient way to locate a car that, you know, can't be seen.
Right. I mean, there is, you know, an obvious shortage of manpower in dealing with these things.
This email says, Rick, I could be wrong, but didn't the original caller say milepost 22, not milepost 26, as the original 911 operator relayed to the other emergency personnel? I don't know. I don't have the energy to come back and check. It's entirely possible, I suppose. All right, 503-73. What is it? Does Scotty seem to have, regardless of whether he turns out to be right or wrong about this, does Scotty seem to have a disproportionate amount of anger towards people who die in any sort of wilderness? See, anybody who dies in any kind of vehicular mishap in the Northwest, Scotty immediately just becomes infuriated about some aspect of the story. It does seem a little strange.
No, the caller, I'm looking at the transcript. The caller said it was a quarter mile west of milepost 26 on the north side of the highway. And then the dispatcher says, quarter mile west of 26.
Well, okay. Well, let's do this, and then we'll take a break. Hi, you're on the Rick Emerson Show.
Hey, Rick.
What's up?
Well, there's something that we're all forgetting here about this accident on Highway 26 is that, one, I know that area, and it's full of ravines and sharp corners that if you're not paying attention, you'll just go right off the road.
Right.
And for two, if you go off the road, you're dead. The car was, what, 100 and some odd feet down into the ravine?
Well, that's the thing. It's like I couldn't see the car because it went right down, into this huge crevasse.
Yeah, there's a river that runs along there, and that's out by Flat Iron Mountain area.
Uh-huh.
And there's no cell service until you get to Tillamook or over by Seaside.
So where, do we know where, Scotty, no excuse, he types on the screen. Except I think the point the guy's making, Scotty, is that he would have had, how, in your estimation, sir, how many mile as they would say in Iowa, is it from where the crash was to where there would reasonably be cell service?
Oh, about 10.
Yeah, so it's like 10 miles away before you can even get a cell signal.
Yeah, and you have to remember something. When you call 911, no matter what phone you're on, they have your phone number.
That's the other thing. Well, they have the guy's name.
Yeah.
They have his name, too. They cut
they
it.
Have the phone number. Yeah. When you call 911, even if you're on a block, you cannot block a call to 911.
And they cut his last name out, I think, on this news story. But they have the guy's full name clearly because the 911 operator asked him what his name was. So they do have his name and phone number.
Yeah.
So
all they have to do is call him back if they couldn't find it or anything else.
Right.
And ask him to come back to the scene.
That's an interesting point, too, that if they couldn't find the car, why didn't they call the guy back and say, hey, could you clarify where that car was?
Yeah. I don't know, you know?
That is interesting. Now it's all mysterious to me. See, now this is like how Clyde Lewis is, this is what it's like to be in Clyde's head. Now everything just seems spooky and sinister to me. Nothing is what it seems, sir.
Batman in a car eating donuts with a spotlight.
All right, thank you. The eagle has landed, sir. The fat man walks alone. The cock crows at midnight. It's 503-733-2970. We should break here. We'll come back, talk a little Transformers, more of Scotty J's blame laying about this car accident, and more from Tim Riley at the Ministry of Truth. Later on, Steve Castamama at the hot dog eating contest coming up tomorrow. You stay there. It's the Rick Emerson Show on AM 970, Solid State Radio. Don't go anywhere. Back after this. You gotta be sorry. We'll reprise this.
Oh, I hate this song.
It's a terrible song. Am I thinking of the right woman, too? Is she like a big...
She's not good-looking.
Butch-looking white woman. Beastie woman.
Yeah. Ew, and also
exactly.
She's just like grabbing her boobs and dancing in this horrible, like, cut-off flannel shirt.
Sexy. I mean... Look, I know that there's someone for everyone. I'm just saying she's a huge...
She doesn't seem that huge.
She's a huge wall of ugly. Well, when I saw her on Politically Incorrect, she...
She looks like she doesn't shave her armpits.
She looks like...
And I'm saying that's a negative thing, that she just kind of looks natural.
She looks like she smells. Let's just call it what it is.
Can we just give it natural?
She's a natural lady. You make me smell like a natural woman. All right, it's 5:00. Please stop. Thank you. 503-733-2970. Ladies and gentlemen, here's Tim Riley.
Well, I don't know if this is really breaking news, but TMZ says that Nicole Richie is pregnant.
Yeah, have you seen the... And I have. The front of all the tabloids where they're pointing at, I hate the phrase baby bump. I hate that. I hate it. I hate it. I hate it. I hate it. I hate that phrase. But they're all like, look at the baby bump. And of course, it's so minuscule because she heard, you'd think that on Nicole Richie, it would be really obvious, right? Because she's like, she's a rail.
Well, my friend Lisa's knocked up and she's like 5.5 months pregnant. And you can't, it just looks like she has a little bit of a beer gut.
Yeah, but sexy. But at OMSI, they show the embryos or whatever, zygotes? What were those things? Embryos? What are the little things? The little miniature babies?
I think they're embryos.
Whatever.
Miniature babies.
Whatever they are, I don't know. I'm not a, you know, but they showed the different stages of human development. It was 8 weeks, right? Isn't that the one they showed from 0 all the way to 8 weeks? And at 8 weeks, I mean, it's still very small.
Like weird little fingers.
It's like
everything.
It looks like a little prawn with hands. Blah, 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 blah. So you got that wouldn't make much of a gut. Although I guess there's got to be like the whatever, the amniotic thing and the sac.
The sac. Oh, the sac.
I don't know anything about reproductive biology in terms of like a baby or having one. But you know what? I don't need to. So, you know what I mean? That's like point C, D, and E, and Q. So as long as I can just stay at point A and never progress any further, I don't need to know any of that stuff. So what was my point?
So Nicole, John Madden is the father.
Nicole.
And so what I'm going to do is I'm going to get on top here, and I'm going to circle around here, and then my sperm is going to go right in the middle, and then it's going to bypass this, and it's going to go right into the egg, and bam, I'm going to score.
Oh, I think it's Joel Madden.
Oh, that ruins my whole bit.
John Madden's impregnating Nicole Richie, 07.
All right.
I'm just picturing him drawing all over her with the big, you know, the CBS chalkboard. But you figure the baby bump would be visible in her, but it's just, they can't even, like, they've done, like, the John Madden chalkboard thing, actually, on the front of People magazine. They've circled her stomach, and there is literally, like, an arrow pointing at what looks like an insect bite of some kind. They're like, hey, look at it, it's a baby! So there you go. Fathom how uninteresting it must be to have sex with Nicole Richie, though. I mean, seriously, for the love of God. I mean, why? It's like having sex with some deflated blow-up doll. You know what I mean? Like, right out of the box. You haven't even put air in it yet. All right, here's Tim Riley. And that guy, and he's in a rock band. They're bad, and they suck, and they don't have any hits anymore. But, I mean, come on, and he's fat. But seriously, if you can't do better than Nicole Richie, that guy from
Space Hog. Maybe she's John Madden.
That guy from Space Hog had one hit 10 years ago. He's banging Liv Tyler. The best this guy can do is Nicole Richie. And don't give me that, well, she's a sweet spirit. She's an old soul. You know she's dumb. Mm-hmm. You know she's just as thick
and
as two short
bitch,
planks.
Too. Have you heard her talk?
She's a horrible, ugly, skinny, mm-hmm. unattractive, terrible person.
An old ragdoll.
Yes. Effort.
All right, here's Tim Ryan. Somebody did.
Five people are dead from methane gas at a Virginia farm.
Oh, no.
The Daily News Record of Brewery Branch, Virginia, reports a tragedy occurred after Scott Showalter tried to unclog a pipe used to transfer cow manure from a small pit into a larger one.
Manure?
I barely knew her.
So what did Farmer Scott do? He climbed into the pipe.
Don't ever get in the pipe.
And inhaled the deadly gas. Knowing he was in trouble, his wife and daughters climbed in to save him, and they too.
This is a whole
perish from inhaling the manure gas.
This is a whole domino effect, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Where the whole
family,
the whole Hick family, bit the dust. Imagine spending the last moments of your life being smothered to death by cow manure
in Brewery Branch, Virginia.
Jesus God, and living and dying in Brewery Branch. All right, that's that. All right, let's see, Rick. It's a fetus when it's gestating. It's an embryo.
Fetus.
I'm not even hungry.
Nah, it's not funny.
It's an embryo when it... I don't want to... First of all, because someone will inevitably tune in halfway through the sentence and believe that we've turned into the Glenn Beck Show and we're discussing Roe v. Wade. And also because this is all just very confusing.
What time is Jim Dobson going to be on?
Seriously. It's not a fetus. It's a fetus when it's gestating. It's an embryo when it starts. Well, at the risk of walking into a really unpleasant landmine of a conversation, well, what's the difference then? What do you mean when it starts? When does it stop starting? I mean, I know it sounds like a stupid statement. But if you say it's a fetus when it's gestating, I can't even believe these words are leaving my mouth. This is how every bad talk show installment starts. If it's a fetus when it's gestating and it's an embryo when it starts, well, then when does the starting over? Now, you know what? Forget I said this. If I thought I would have dumped this entire thing, I would have just hit the delay. It's not that I don't care. I don't care enough to talk about it here. So just, you know, whatever. Let's forget we had this entire... It's Adam and Eve, Rick, not Adam and Steve. Rick, you know who supposedly slept with Nicole Richie? Jason Mewes, before he finally did his stint in rehab, so he's not the father. All right, here's Tim Rudd.
President Bush is not closing the door on a full pardon for Lewis the Scooter Libby. During a visit today to Walter Reed Medical Center in Washington, the president said, quote, he will not rule anything in or nothing out.
I had to make a very difficult decision.
Uh-huh.
I weighed this decision carefully.
And then did what Carl Rove told me to do.
I thought that the jury verdict should stand. I felt the punishment was severe.
Well, of course,
I had a conversation with Dick Cheney.
Of course, the punishment is severe. It's punishment. That's the whole point.
Maybe he has claustrophobia, so he didn't want to think.
He has ADD. If punishment is really fun, then it's not punishment. I can't wait for this punishment. It's going to be ecstasy. If punishment is really enjoyable, then it's not punishment. That's why they have those words. You can tell them apart. For the love of sweet Christ. Hi, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hello.
Yeah.
How can I help you?
I went and saw the Transformers movie yesterday.
Uh-huh.
And I think you're going to be getting sponsored very soon.
Wait, so you think that I'm going to win the bet?
No, no, no. You're going to be doing the song. I'm sorry, I said that wrong. You're
So I will be having the name check Corden Fatboy show.
Yeah, get really good at it really quick.
Yeah. I got to say, the Oregonian gave it a B, so, I mean, there's that.
Well, I would say that if you are a Transformers buff from the past, you're going to love it like 100%. If you know nothing about it, they do try to cram as much information into it as possible to get people caught up to where, you know, the rest of us are at, basically.
To give you all that really important Transformers backstory that you need.
Oh, yeah, you know, that really, you know, deep thinking backstory.
Yeah, all right.
At least they didn't use the term Matrix of Leadership for how to walk out.
No, it's true. Did they? Does Optimus Prime say, you know, transform and roll out?
He doesn't do it in a combination, but he does use roll out.
All right. And do they make the...
Yes, they make the... Wow, 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 wow.
Hi, we're nerds.
Very, very cool. You're in a lot of trouble.
All right. Thank you, sir.
You're welcome. Now.
There you go. I know that Sarah's going to pay to see it. You'll pay to see the Transformers.
I probably would.
You and what's his name, Raul, will go to see it. I won't pay any money to see that. I will see it at some point. I won't pay money, but I know that probably most people. Scotty will probably see it. Hi, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hello.
I think you're talking to me now. Is that right?
Yes.
I just have a theory of connecting the dots with why the two folks who had the accident weren't reported immediately.
They were. Let's clarify this.
I'm sorry. That's correct. Yeah, they weren't reported immediately, but there wasn't enough information to determine exactly where they were, as I understand it.
Well, didn't the guy? Didn't the guy say they're at mile marker 26?
That's correct.
I mean, he said like they're mile marker 26. They went right off the road at mile marker 26.
Yeah, and so it's kind of a mystery why they weren't found real quickly.
Well, I mean, except that they went, I guess they went off and they landed in like a ravine which is obscured by trees. That would be my deal, I guess.
No, I think there was a cover-up.
Uh-huh.
And I think it involves D.B. Cooper.
I was just going to ask if this is going to be a wacky call.
I'm trying. It may not work, but I tried.
Okay, well, continue.
Thank you.
That was the extent of the joke.
Well, I wrote down a few other notes involving Valerie Plame and Bigfoot. But
no, I'll just sit back. You take a shot at it.
None of them go past that. It's just those words. I figured maybe it'd be funny just to say some mysterious things and make it a big joke. And so much for that idea.
Do you feel that you were successful in this endeavor?
No, pretty weak, actually.
Well, they do have courses about this at Mount Hood Community College.
And late night talk show slots on KPAM. So, you know, there's always that.
Real late, right?
All Air America has some openings, too, by the way.
All good. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Bye-bye.
Bye now. All right, there you go.
That was a waste.
I know it's going to be just a waste of air is what that was. I know they're looking. I know those shoes of Al Franken's are going to be real tough to fill over there, but you know what? You take your best shot. Don't give up, Curtis. All right, here's Tim Riley.
So meanwhile, the president said he could still park the
best part, though, was how you just picked up the newspaper. About 10 seconds in, Tim spotted that call was going to be bad, and the rustling of Tim just opening the New York Times and just checking out for the duration of the call. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Well, no, I was just saying, every time I open up the New York Times and look in the art section, Robin Williams is in another movie.
Yeah.
Doesn't any time go by when he's not in the movie?
That's no. No, and like Whoopi Goldberg, everything he does fails, and then
his failure
is rewarded with another project. Exactly. Well, it wasn't yesterday. We were talking about Whoopi Goldberg, who I think her radio show, I think, is gone.
Yeah.
And so they're rewarding her by giving her a shot on The View, apparently. Robin Williams, who is, at this point, I think, pretty much disliked by everyone, and...
He peaked doing Mork and Mindy, which was like 20 years ago.
Really? What was the last good, I mean, legitimately good film Robin Williams did?
Mrs. Doubtfire.
Maybe. I mean, I could get with that, I suppose. I guess I laughed.
If you think about Robin Williams, you think about Mrs. Doubtfire.
I get that is true. I laughed. I chuckled. It was a walk by fruiting. boobs on fire.
I mean, that's the most
Riley, sorry.
The most memorable scene of his career, I think.
I'm going to totally... That should, you know, that'll be the porn knockoff of Blades of Glory to be like, boobs of fire. No, it's true. Okay, and he's putting him out with the pot covers or whatever.
That was the scene of his career.
I laughed during Mrs. Doubtfire. I'll give it up. I chuckled heartily. But before that,
Good Morning Vietnam, kind of, but that's kind of faded off in the distance.
I would say the Good Morning Vietnam is like Good morning, Vietnam is like a lot of movies from that era. Like Spaceballs comes to mind, and I know I'm angering geeks by this.
Yeah. You haven't seen Night at the Museum yet.
No.
Right? Robin Williams was in that.
Really? Was he good? Was he terrible?
No, it wasn't annoying.
I didn't see it.
I know that you have a disdain for him anyway.
Yeah.
Well, I don't think he's doing cocaine anymore.
That's why he's not funny.
Yeah.
He is fairly calm. It's kind of strange.
He can be good. I mean, you know what? He was good in Good Will Hunting. In Good Will Hunting, he was good. I'll give you that. Good Will Hunting, he was good. And, of course, he was good in Dead Poets Society.
No, that was a good movie.
Dead Poets Society was a great film. I'm glad I saw that when I was younger and not now. It would be hard to watch that movie now because it would seem too calculated. If I saw Dead Poets Society now, it would seem like a too calculated of a gesture and too calculated of a project. Like, oh, look, I'm a comic guy. Suddenly I'm doing the dramatic role, which is like when, Jim Carrey and Will Ferrell have had those things where it's like they try and sort of Adam Sandler with Punch Drunk Love, where they're the comic guys and they try to make the serious film. Good Will Hunting was great. Dead Poets Society was great. Good Morning Vietnam, though, is one of those movies, like Spaceballs, that at the time seemed like the funniest movie you'd ever seen. But then you go back and you watch Good Morning Vietnam now, and it's staggering how bad that movie is, actually. Good Morning Vietnam is just a terrible film. It's terrible. It's predictable. It's hackneyed. It's cliched. Forrest Whitaker is great. And I think Bruno Kirby is in that. He's pretty good. But it's just an awful film in retrospect because it is... And then it was almost immediately followed by Aladdin. And Aladdin was another one of those things where it was like, oh, it's the genius of Robin Williams, given its fullest avenue of expression. And you realize the Good Morning Vietnam, Aladdin... I can't believe I'm spending this much time discussing the oeuvre of Robin Williams, but the Good Morning Vietnam back-to-back with Aladdin, that is when... I hate to use the phrase jump the shark, but that's when he peaked, because that was when it was revealed. That was when the mechanism was laid bare, and you realized that Robin Williams didn't really have, he wasn't really funny, he didn't really have, like, any sort of real style. It was just that he said 1,000 moderately amusing things a second, and therefore you felt like you were hearing a lot of comedy. Like and you realize then that he did, it was like the same shtick he always did. It was just like, he would just say a lot of things that didn't make any sense, and he would suddenly start talking like John Wayne for no real reason, or whatever. And he would like break into a John Wayne thing for like 3 words. And that was it. And it was just, that became like every Robin Williams. That became his entire shtick right there. Which is why for years after Aladdin, he was still voted the funniest man in America. Even though I don't think anybody could call up and tell me a Robin Williams joke. I don't think anybody could call him. Remember that classic joke that Robin Williams told? Nobody remembers a classic Robin Williams joke.
Well, they kind of turned him into a Bob Hope.
Yeah, he didn't really have jokes. He was a guy who talked really fast. I'm no one to speak, of course, but he was a guy who talked really fast, and therefore people sort of assumed that there must be content there somewhere. But just like with this program, there frequently is no content at all. It's just rapidity.
But his newest movie, License to Win, it'll keep you laughing, says Sarah Zapp of Comcast.
Sarah Zapp of Comcast. Sarah Zapp sounds like she's a little animated icon in the corner when you go to Comcast.com. Hi, I'm Sarah Zapp. What would you like to do? Send email? Complain about our service? Access broadband? Yell at us about something?
Wildly entertaining. A laugh out loud, hilarious romp, says Greg Russell of the Movie Show Plus.
These are really reliable sources.
Yeah, they're from the New York Times, too.
Isn't
that embarrassing?
Anything that's called a romp is terrible. Anything that is called a romp.
It's a romp into the next theater to see what else is playing at that moment. You'll romp into the next theater.
Fantastic. Laugh out loud. It's a rib-tickling laugh-a-thon. It's a slap-happy giggle-fest. Jesus. Let's see. What do we have? All these people calling about Robin Williams.
Yeah.
No one has talked this much about Robin Williams since like 1995. Really, it's. Let's see. What are we? Rick, Robin Williams is the modern day Marlon Brando. No talent, just shtick. All right. What are we? Well, that's going to have to wait, Scotty, because everybody's wrong. Because this important call in line one has to wait for a second.
As popular as Robin Williams may be.
Because I have to take all of these Robin Williams calls. Hi, Daryl, you're on the Rick Emerson Show.
Hey,
Bitch.
Yeah. I thought one of his better shows also. I just don't remember the name of the one he played the doctor with the old people in it. They ended up taking whatever type of medicine made him okay for a little bit.
Please tell me you're not talking about Patch Adams.
No. He played a doctor. I just don't remember the name of the show. But there was older people in there, and it was like an old folk home, basically. And he was trying to bring them back to life, so to speak. But that one, which I can't remember the name, I thought Giambi or however you pronounce it, that one looked so bad.
I have no idea. Does anybody know what film he's talking about?
Mm-mm.
No. Are you thinking of Cocoon, sir?
No. He was a doctor, and I can't see the name of the show, but it was basically an old folk home. I'm sure some callers out there know what the heck I'm talking about.
Yeah.
But anyway, besides that, when the car went over the road, I'm just not sure why that guy didn't stick around or if he did have to go get some of her cell phone. Make sure they got there. I haven't figured that part out.
Oh, all roads lead back to this guy who made the cell phone call.
Yeah.
All right, thank you.
Okay, take it easy. Bye-bye.
Bye now.
All right. That is kind of true, especially if it's in the middle of the afternoon.
Well, he has three films in pre-production.
Really?
Stack
them up as fast as you can. Hi, Sky. You're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hello.
Hi, Rick.
Hey.
I was just wondering if anybody remembered The World According to Garp.
Yeah.
I think that was his first movie, wasn't it?
Maybe. I actually don't know the answer to that. Long time ago. God, that would have been what, like 86?
Oh, it was a long time
84?
Ago.
84? Something like that. Yeah. Yeah, maybe. World According to Garp.
I think he was great in that.
Yeah, 1982.
82.
That was his first one.
So that's...
No, Popeye was his first one.
Popeye. Jesus. That's when he was still on drugs, and everything is better when all your talents are magnified, I believe.
Why was he on an episode of It Is Enough?
Oh, I know the answer to this.
It's the return of Anti-V, whatever that is.
No, I don't. I thought I knew the answer to this. I think he was a cousin or something on It Is Enough. All right. Thank you, Sky.
You're welcome, hon.
All right, there you go. That's a Sky. That's a great name. Hi, Ryan. You're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hello.
Hey, Rick.
Hey.
Not one of his funny movies, but 1 Hour Photo.
I never saw that, but I heard it was good. I heard that was good, and I heard What's
Insomnia
was good.
He was really good because Robin Williams is more than sufficiently creepy in that movie. He's just disturbing.
No, I'm getting a lot of emails right now. People say 1 Hour Photo, and it did look really good. Maybe I'll watch that this week or something. I'm trying to plow through a bunch of movies that are stacked up at home.
It's a little slow.
Really? But
yeah,
it's creepy,
but
right?
It's good, yeah.
I still gotta watch 1408. I still haven't watched Little Miss Sunshine. That one's sitting at home too.
I love that movie.
Yeah, I got all of these movies. I'm so behind with the culture. Actually, okay, 1 Hour Photo, Ryan. I will write that down.
And Transformers.
Yeah.
The only critique that I have about that movie was that it's so action packed filled that there's no break. I mean, it's that good of a movie, but it's just on and on and on, and it doesn't really pause at all.
All right, excellent. I'll find a way to sneak into it or something. I'll pay to see Nancy Drew again.
Maybe you can just get someone to pay your way in. That way, you're not actually paying for it.
So I'm not on the hook. I'll make my wife pay.
Exactly.
All right, thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Everybody's talking about that movie, Awakening. That's the movie, I guess, they're talking about the old people. Awakening, so Robert De Niro. Oh, how about this one? Rick, what about Death to Smoochie? Yeah, what about that? And what about Shakes the Clown? All right. It's what movies does he have in pre-production, by the way? Say? Or have you already moved on?
I've already moved on. I lost interest.
You've moved off of Robin Williams.
Yeah.
All right, let's be done with Robin Williams then. Let's do one more, and then we'll take a break.
Well, the president said he could pardon Scooter Libby.
Aren't we still on this?
Yeah, we never finished it.
Jesus.
He could pardon Scooter Libby anytime he feels like it.
So I made a decision that would commute his sentence, but leave in place a serious fine in probation. As to the future, I'm, rule nothing in or nothing out.
Jail time is not correct for this case.
But I felt like the 30-month sentencing was severe and made a judgment, a considered judgment, that I believe is the right decision to make in this case. And I stand by it.
Well, whatever.
Like all the other mistakes.
I was going to say, I mean, why quit now? Really, why reverse yourself at this point?
Could I possibly be right at some point? I don't think so. I'll just keep making uninformed decisions.
Put your full force behind that wrong choice and just stay there.
My place in history has already been guaranteed. What can I do now?
Just entrench yourself. All right, it's 503-733-2970. Well, we'll come back, and we'll just continue with the news. How say ye about that?
Fine.
Okay. Fantastic. That kind of enthusiasm can only mean one thing. More of Tim Riley here on the corner, plus Steve Katzenbaum talking to us from New York City about the hot dog eating contest happening tomorrow. We'll have a stunning revelation about the champion, Kobayashi. Yeah, you stay there. It's the Rick Emerson Show on AM 970 Solid State Radio. The Rick Emerson radio program. You know, no one has talked about why this Jesuit priest is traveling all over the country with some woman. I don't mean to cast aspersions or imply that something untoward was going on, but come on now. And what is... Have they released... Let me ask you this.
They weren't wearing seatbelts.
Really? You know, maybe. You know, the Lord helps those who help themselves, Father. Let me just say this. Am I missing something here, or have they not revealed the name of these people? Have they, Tim?
They have, yes.
Okay. Because I thought you were saying that they hadn't.
Well, in California, I guess they didn't...
In California... Okay, so they're releasing the name. Okay, it was... Okay, no, I'm wrong about that. It was right here. David Schwartz. Mm-hmm. That's right, because we seized on the fact that there was a Catholic priest named Schwartz. And 61-year-old Cheryl Gibbs, who worked apparently as a coroner. Coroner?
I barely knew her.
But I guess in California, they're not revealing her name. They're keeping her name quiet for some reason. It's very odd. I'm looking at them right now. They're just a strange-looking couple of people. All right. Well, whatever. Well, we'll talk more about that here in a few. It's 503-733-2970. 503-733-2970. More from Tim Riley here. Just a skosh, as our Asian friends say. Let's welcome now to the Rick Emerson Show from New York City. CNN radio correspondent and man about town, the one and only Steve Katzenbaum. Why, hello, sir.
Good afternoon, eh? Listen, good morning.
That's all right. Well, what time is it? Well, it's still... I don't think it's morning anywhere now. Never mind. I was going to try to excuse that, but that just would have been wrong.
Right.
How's life in New York City, Steve?
I'm excited because tomorrow, one of the greatest events in sports history is about to take place.
This is the competitive eating contest at Nathan's... now, is it Nathan's Famous? Nathan's Hot... Am I conflating that with the Ray's Famous Original? What is the name of the hot dog place?
Nathan's Famous.
Nathan's Famous. And so that's where the hot dog eating contest happens. And this Kobayashi guy, and I hate to sound like an ugly American, but I don't even really know his first name. Does he have a first name, or is he like one of those... Is he like Madonna? He just goes by Kobayashi.
Takeru Kobayashi! That's how they introduce them.
I think you should have to say it that way in any live shot you do for the duration of the day.
Well, I am so psyched for this. I even have my tension music ready, my tension sound effect. You want to hear this?
I do. This is the tension sound effect for your Takeru Kobayashi hot dog eating contest story. Okay, go ahead, sir.
Here it goes. The bell.
I don't really know that that counts as music. Okay. Well, okay, it's sort of a minimalist kind of a Philip Glass kind of a thing. All right.
Well, tension in Coney Island, that's what it's all about.
You've been anticipating this story for quite some time, haven't you?
I really have.
The highlight of your month.
Oh, this is so exciting. I mean, come on. Where else can you see a little guy who's like 123 pounds eat 50-some-odd hot dogs in 12 minutes?
It is pretty impressive. So we got a lot to ask you about this. So first of all, he's no longer the champion, though. It is, and this is the most American name I could possibly think of. The world record is now Joey Chestnut, who sounds like he ought to be a country singer somewhere.
God bless Joey Chestnut. I'm really excited for this guy. He ate 59 and a half hot dogs in 12 minutes just a few weeks ago, breaking Takeru Kobayashi's record, and he hopes to bring back the mustard yellow belt to America from this six-time reigning champ.
Now, was Kobayashi in this last contest?
No, he was not in the last contest a few weeks ago. Now, here's the controversy. You see, this is what we need. We need that backstory on this to make it so tense. Kobayashi had oral surgery about 2 months ago or something like that, and there have been complications. He had some misaligned molars, and because he's, you know, using his muscles and his jaw so much, he had to have surgery because it was causing him pain. Well, now he's had complications, And he's been going through physical therapy trying to get his jaw, you know, back into working order, but he's having trouble opening his mouth all the way. So the question is, will he be a true competitor for Joey Chestnut tomorrow on the shores of Coney Island?
No, I
don't think Steve Castleman reporting.
No, this is totally great. Yeah, no, you have that official newsman right here ending things with a downward inflection.
I am so into this. You have no idea. I've lived my whole life in Brooklyn, so this is like a highlight every summer.
Please don't think that we're poking fun. We're really not. I am not making a lot of this. It really is great. It's just, please understand what I mean when I say that it is great and stupid and wonderful and awful all at once. I mean, it's the most American thing ever.
That's what's so great about it. It's so stupid.
Yeah, no, it's great. And only in America, you know, people around the world having to share like an acorn, you know, in Rwanda. And in America, there's a guy just stuffing 53 hot dogs into his mouth for a sport. It is an interesting question about this Kobayashi guy, and I don't mean to minimalize this, but I mean, really, where does that food go? I mean, it's just astounding.
You know, I asked Joey Chestnut that, and he was telling me that, you know, his body digests it all. I said, you know, because one of the rules is you have to keep it down. And he said he does, that his body somehow takes it all in. He's not a big guy.
Well, they never are. They're always kind of slender guys. They're never big fat guys.
Well, the big fat guys, he was saying, don't win these contests because, A, they don't have the cardiovascular stamina. I'm not kidding you. To keep up the rate of eating these many hot dogs.
Lifting my arms is so hard. Yeah.
In 12 minutes, they can't do it. Plus, he was saying their stomachs are surrounded by too much fat and they can't expand the size needed to take in that much food in such a short period of time.
Now, you know, eventually there's going to be a scandal because it's going to come out that somebody's going to accuse somebody of having had their stomach artificially expanded or something.
Oh, but wait. Today at the weigh-in, somebody asked Chestnut the equivalent of, are you doping? And they were asking him if he was taking enzymes to speed up his digestion. So there's controversy, too.
And do they, now here's a dumb question, do they test for that kind of thing at the hot dog eating contest?
The International, hold on, I don't want to get this wrong.
No, of course not.
It's the International Federation of Competitive Eating. That's the name of the official body.
Right.
And if there is any question about whether somebody's been doping, there will be testing.
Fantastic. So what time does this all kick off tomorrow?
I will be there on the boardwalk at Coney Island. This kicks off at 12:30 is when the contest is.
12:30 Eastern time.
12:30 Eastern time.
Okay, excellent. So so we have you booked at 11 o'clock our time, by which it will be, that's 2 o'clock your time, by which it will be resolved?
I believe so.
Is that true, Sarah? When do we have him booked tomorrow?
I scheduled him for 2, because I figured it was going to be in the middle of the
afternoon. Oh, I'm sorry, my mistake. So we're talking to you at 2 o'clock tomorrow, so by 5 o'clock your time, so it will be over by then, undoubtedly.
Not since Ali Frazier has New York seen a sports moment like this.
You're just on your own little cloud today. You're in your own little hermetically sealed hot dog eating bubble. It's fantastic.
It's so weird and disgusting. It doesn't get any better.
I love to hear a guy who's really into the story he's covering. I really mean that sincerely.
This is great.
All right.
The only thing that's missing is Howard Cosell doing the play-by-play.
Let me ask you this. Do you have one of those 7-Elevens that got turned into a Simpsons Quickie Mart?
Somewhere around here there is one. I haven't gotten out to it, but I was reading that there is one around here somewhere.
Yeah, that's good. I'm glad you got one. We don't need one here in Portland where Matt Groening is from. Don't worry about us. All right. Don't worry about it. I'm not bitter. All right.
I'll check in with you guys tomorrow.
All right, my friend. Go get yourself psyched up. Go just vibrate yourself into a frenzy somewhere. I can hear it over, the phone in your voice. All right. We'll talk to you tomorrow, Steve.
So long.
There you go. There's Steve Kastenbaum. Boy, could that guy be more excited. All right. It's 503-733. 2970. We'll get some more of these phone calls here in a second. Let's continue the news with your... Switch. as soon as I said let's continue the news, just a panicked look followed by a where are my headphones, followed by a let me sort and organize things. I'm ready. Ladies and gentlemen, Tim Riley. Well, today in court, the judge took away the keys of a mean old lady. You might remember Jenny Glasser.
Glasser?
She drove through parade barricades during the Rose Festival Kids Parade.
Yeah.
She was hitting a cop, several families, little children, and even the ice cream man.
She's the Broughton Bishop of parades.
Mm-hmm. She's charged with 10 counts of reckless driving and reckless endangerment. He told her not to drive and made sure she didn't. And he took away her key.
Really?
Yeah.
I wonder if she yelled at him and, like, tried to hit him with a whippersnapper. What does a whippersnapper even mean? What is it when people say whippersnapper? That's a thing that everybody says Like old people say that. In fact, it's so common. I don't even know if anybody says it in real life anymore, but it is the go-to. Like if you want to, you know what it is? It's like how nobody really has a big bag of money with a dollar sign in the front of it, but it's what you use to represent money. Whippersnapper is what you use to represent old people yelling at you. But what does it even mean? Did anybody even really say that?
No.
Okay, well, F that. Screw it. Hi, Sean. You're on the Rick Emerson Show.
Oh, hey. I was calling about a couple things. First, I saw the Transformers movie last night.
Uh-huh.
And it was probably one of the worst movies I've ever seen.
Really? That makes me feel better.
It was every cliche you've ever seen from every action movie, mm-hmm. and all the goofy, bumbling characters, and I'm like sitting there and they do something stupid and everybody around me would laugh. And I'm just looking, trying to figure out what they found funny. And then, of course, you have the wacky, jive-talking black guy, and every time he says something, everybody's just in hysterics, and I'm like...
And is it Bernie Mac?
Well, there's Bernie Mac, there's also Anthony Anderson, who plays a hacker.
Anderson, who can be funny and can be menacing, but I heard he really phones it in this one.
Oh, God, everybody does. And the worst thing about it, the absolute worst, is you'd think a movie called Transformers would be mostly Transformers running around blowing each other and blowing stuff up. Yeah. And it's like, basically, there's two or three Transformer fights and then mostly Transformers saying funny things. And there's the dialogue for everything is schlocky and, like, tongue-in-cheek and funny. So you can't take anybody in the movie seriously at all. It was frustrating because it could have been an awesome movie, and it wasn't. So.
I see, and this is the thing. I know that there are some people who will think it's silly, and I am not among them, but there are some people who will think it seriously that you are saying, well, they could have made the Transformers movie serious, and it's hard to take seriously. But it seems like there were one of two ways to go. There was, you know, you could make it just a big cartoon where it was just, you know, very sort of like a Saturday morning serial or a cartoon, just very paper thin and very whatever. Or you could have gone like balls out and made it like a full on serious, heart pounding, you know, explosion filled action movie. And it sounds like they did sort of a combination of both. It sounds like they wanted to be an action movie, but they also wanted to be sort of funny and isn't this sort of silly. And that seems like a bad combination.
Yeah, it didn't work for me. Everybody else loved it, and I'm pretty sure that you're going to lose the bet to Corton Fatboy, but you shouldn't. Midway through the movie, I just looked around, and all I thought was, I hate America. That's my review for the movie. I hate America.
All right, excellent. Thank you.
Also, yes. Tonight at Dante's, there's a band playing called Slim Cessna's Auto Club.
What's Auto Club?
Slim Cessna's.
Oh, I saw the ad for that on the billboard or on the banner outside yesterday, but I don't know what it is.
Oh, it's, are you familiar with the music? It's referred to as the Denver Sounds?
No, I've got nothing.
Okay, it's kind of a cross between traditionalist revival country and bluegrass and gothic lyrics.
Okay.
And so they have these dark surrealist lyrics and this... Oh, go ahead.
I'm just listening, sir.
Oh, okay. And so it's dark surrealist lyrics and this kind of interesting traditionalist kind of bluegrass music, but mixed with southern rock and roll, and it's probably the best live show I've ever seen the last time they played here.
All right,
and
Dante's.
Yes.
Dante's tonight, Slim Cessna's Auto Club.
Yes, all right. Everybody should go. They are awesome.
All right, excellent. Thank you, sir.
Oh, yeah, no problem.
All right, there you go. I'm sorry, we have to move on, my friend. He was all disappointed.
He seemed so disappointed.
I thought I was staying
for the office for 10 minutes.
I thought I was staying for the duration of the program. He was like pulling up a chair. Telegrapher Tim was actually yawning at one point. Telegrapher Tim's just sort of like leaning back and looking at his watch. No, I understand that guy's pain, though. We've all done that, though, where we go to the theater, and it's usually in a trailer, where they're showing a trailer for some awful, let's say, Robin Williams film. And what happens? Everybody in the theater is laughing but you, right? Because you realize how terrible it is, but everybody in the theater is chuckling. Look at that, it's Robin Williams, and he's doing something kooky. You know, and then and everybody in the theater is chuckling like idiots, and you just sort of, you want to put your head in your hands and weep.
That just happened when I went to see Knocked Up, and there was the Robin Williams trailer with the wedding one, whatever somebody just mentioned.
Yeah.
It just looked so dumb.
And everybody was laughing at it, weren't they?
Of course, there's the, yeah, there's the fake baby who, like, pees in his face. It's like, oh, that's the dumbest thing.
You're surrounded by morons from Vancouver.
I still can't talk enough about Knocked Up, though. That movie was so funny.
I know. I keep meaning to see it, and then I keep not seeing it. I suck. All right, here's Tim Riley.
An attempted kidnapper remains on the loose after threatening a lady at knife point in the Milwaukee area. Eve Dorner works at a store called the Hippie Shack. She often waves a sign promoting the Hippie Shack to people driving by. Well, that's exactly what she's doing when a man pulled up alongside of her and ordered her to get into his truck and threatened her. He said, get out of the vehicle. And then she said, well, excuse me. Then he said, get out of the vehicle. I have a knife. If you don't get out of the car, I'm going to kill you. So she threw everything she had, including her Hippie Shack sign, at the guy and ran away. He's driving a green 1998 Ford Ranger, so hopefully he's not hanging around Milwaukee. He's 50 years old, heavy set, 260 pounds.
He's sure heavy set hair. In Milwaukee?
Yeah, can you imagine that?
No, I can't.
And graying around the temples. That's that.
Aaron says, hey, I recognize the nasally voice of an upset fanboy anywhere. Guy's probably still upset that they put flames on Optimus Prime.
Yeah.
All right, here's Tim Riley.
A suspect in a Happy Valley bank robbery was detained by authorities after he was on playing video poker shortly after the robbery. He robbed a bank on, 82nd Avenue in Happy Valley. They later found him at Harmony Inn. He was seated at a video poker machine. He was turned over to the FBI. Connecticut Democratic Senator Chris Dodd, who apparently is running for president, even though nobody knows it, is expanding his presidential campaign website, like we knew he had one in the first place, to include the greatest hits from the campaign trail. Dodd, who receives low poll numbers, like zero, is showing up the best of his speeches online.
Who is this?
Christopher Dodd.
Oh, my God.
He's a Connecticut senator. Not Joe Lieberman.
Welcome
he's
to the
He's a Connecticut senator. He's not Joe Lieberman.
No, yeah. Who's going to win nothing.
Yeah.
Nothing is what he'll win.
Mm-hmm.
All right. This is, he's like another Biden. He's another Joe Biden. He's a perpetual candidate.
Yeah.
Every 4 years, Chris Dodd runs for something. By the way, we should clarify about the competitive eating tomorrow. It's at noon Eastern time, so 9 o'clock is when it starts here. So by the time we get, so it'll probably be over by the time. It's funny how I ask Cassim, I'm like, when is it over? And he's like, Rick, let me tell you about this sport. He wasn't even hearing my questions. He was so excited. Also, this is from Jenny. They rarely vomit, but if they do, it's called a Roman incident. I guess it's a vomitorium reference. It's completely legal to vomit so long as the clock has stopped, and if they vomit, nothing is allowed. And if they don't vomit on the table or plate. So apparently the clock has to stop and they have to vomit on the floor. Then it's allowed.
That seems reasonable.
Who knew? Really, honestly, who knew? Hi, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. What say you?
Is it me?
Yes, it is, sir.
No, I just wanted to let you guys know the 7-Eleven off of 20th and Hawthorne has a sign posted that they're going to be doing that The Simpsons makeover.
It's a lie.
Is it?
They're lying to you because they've already done it. They've already rolled out all the stores, and Portland was not on the list.
Oh, that sucks.
20th and Hawthorne.
Yeah, but there's one right on the corner next to the Starbucks there.
Oh, yeah. The one in Lad's Edition. Yeah, I know what you're talking about. Well,
yeah,
I don't think they could do that one there anyway, because isn't that one designed all weird to begin with?
Yeah, it's kind of on a corner.
It's
there.
Like in a big stucco building?
No, it's a normal one.
No.
The Lad's Edition one? I thought it was in some weird shell. In other words, I didn't think it was boxy like all the other ones. I thought it was inside some weird, some weird framework.
No, it's own, separate building. Yeah. I don't know what you're talking about, man, but it's just a 7-Eleven. I mean...
No, I know. I'm not trying to start an argument about it. I'm just saying, I thought...
So what does the sign say?
Well, yeah, what does it say?
It says there's, a little drawing of the Simpsons or whatever, and then it just says, doing the Quickie Mart makeover in July. It doesn't have a date, or I don't remember the date.
I think they're screwing with us, because I think they've already rolled that out almost everywhere. I was looking at... Well, I might as well just talk about this now, and then we'll break, and we'll come back, and we'll do more news, and the hey, and the whatnot. So, I come in this morning, because I wasn't angry enough about it to begin with. This show is really all about disproportionate anger at insignificant things. So, I come in today, and Sarah starts showing me these pictures online of this 7-Eleven in Chicago that's been made over into Quickie Mart, and it just infuriated me, because it's so freaking cool.
It's awesome.
It's so freaking cool. Okay, let me just tell you this. You know what they've done here? Here's what we get. In Chicago, I mean, it's so badass. Is that on your blog?
No, it bummed me out.
You
I thought I was going to be able to see
you
it.
You want to put it in your blog, Sarah. That's a lot. That's a good way to get people to go and look at your
blog.
What,
my NC-17 rated blog?
Yes. That's a good way to get people to look at your blog. People.
Oh,
who...
yes. You're a genius.
Yes, I am.
Genius.
Never mind. Everybody ignore that conversation. Anyway, so... Anyways, it's so great. It looks like a Quickie Mart, and the actual sign out front on the, you know, the sign on the metal post out front has been changed to a Quickie Mart. It's got all the cutout characters inside. They're serving Crustios. I mean, it's just so badass. You know what we get on 1st and Arthur, which is about two blocks away from this radio station? If you are near 1st and Arthur in downtown Portland, I would encourage you to drive by our ghetto 7-Eleven down here. And I would look at it. You know what they've got here? In the window... They've got a bunch of those, like, you know, what is that special paint that they use to, like, paint on, like, convenience store windows? You know what I'm talking about? That paint that they put up, like, they paint, like, Christmas trees in the window when December comes. It's like that special, like, horrible, like, discount art school paint that they use on the inside of convenience store windows. There are a bunch of, like, hand-painted, badly done Simpsons faces in the window down here. And, like, you can tell that they weren't done by anybody with any artistic ability. They weren't done according to any sort of, like, layout. They weren't done according to any blueprint that was given to them by 20th Century Fox. It's obviously there's somebody who works at the 7-Eleven down the street here who took like 3 months of training at the Art Institute and thinks that they're an artist and drew like these really awful ghetto versions of the Simpsons family faces. It, when I drove by yesterday and it was just depressing. It just made me shake my head sadly. So, all right, well, we'll keep an eye on that one in the last edition. And just to clarify what I'm saying, I know that 7-Eleven you're talking about, I really do, but it is at a weird angle, and there isn't like a standalone 7-Eleven sign in front of there, is there?
No, I don't think so.
So I wonder if they'd even be able to make the maximum use of that. It seems like they were going to pick one. They'd pick one that was set up more like a traditional 7-Eleven. I mean, I'll take
like
whatever. But check out Sarah's blog later on. She'll post this thing about the one in Chicago.
Yeah.
It just looks so cool.
I'm looking at the website, and there's no Portland. No closest that gets to Seattle.
This infuriates me. Why in the name of God? All right.
Well, thanks a lot, man.
Thank you, Daryl. All right. Yeah. Fills me with rage. One more Simpsons call, and then we'll break. Hi, you're on the Rick Emerson Show.
Rick, I got the definitive reason why the Simpsons ought to be premiered here in Springfield.
Oh, okay.
We have Chief Wiggum and the Springfield Police Department patrolling our highways, apparently.
It really... Lou, there's been some sort of an accident about the... Oh, wait, donuts. Yeah, no, it's true. It's true. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Fantastic. That's Mike. I can't feed my family with a codpiece. All right. By the way, well, we'll read this when we get back. There's been a little wrinkle in the dead Jesuit priest story. So we'll get to that when we come back. All right, Tim, do we have more exciting news on the other side?
You betcha.
Fantastic. Wouldn't have it any other way. It's 503-733-2970. More on the way. Tim Riley returns on the other side, as well as a guy. Let's see, we got more Transformers calls. Comment about the Zodiac Killer for some reason. Well, okay. It's a big tent. We'll take that. Later on, Dennis Pitzenbarger and so forth. You stay there. It's the Rick Emerson Show on AM 970, Solid State Radio. Hello, it's the Rick Emerson Show. It's 503-733-2970. Everybody take a drink. 503-733-2970. Thanks for coming by. And whatnot. On just a moment, we resume the news with Tim Riley. Later on, Dennis Pitzenbarger, Tom Likas at 3, Dynamike at 7. Don't forget, we are here tomorrow. Aaron Geek in the City, Duran, going to be in studio with us tomorrow as well. I had something else I was going to say. What the hell was it? I forget. Don't forget, this coming Saturday is 7707, the luckiest day of the century. We'll be at Outlaws Music Hall this Saturday. Giveaways every 7 minutes starting at 7:07 this coming Saturday, 7707. And, of course, featuring headlining performance by Vanilla Ice. So be getting your tickets for that now because there are more at the door. So get your tickets for that right now, kids. Outlaws Music Hall this coming Saturday, Vanilla Ice. So AM 970 is presenting that. It will be there this Saturday, 7707. Hi, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. What's up?
Hello, Rick.
Hello.
Randy from Texas.
Hi, Randy. What's up?
Don't you want Chris Dodd to win something just so he can say, "New before Dodd"?
Yes.
I'm serious.
Yes, I do. That is funny. Wait, are you the guy that called us from Texas about the... Well, like, I guess how many Randys in Texas could there be?
No,
called us about the iPhone the other day?
That was me.
Yeah,
was
okay. All right.
Hey, I need to tell you.
Uh-huh.
July 24th, uh-huh. Zodiac on DVD.
Yeah, no, I'm all over that. I'm going to buy that the day it comes out.
And you hold to your contention that is a perfect film, which I also do.
I don't know that it's perfect, but I mean it's damn fine. I will say that it's brilliantly done. It's probably the best procedural crime film ever done.
Even with right there in the middle of the film, my favorite song inserted, "Skew Against Deacon Blues."
Well, I will. I'll give it this: it's the best ever use of a Donovan film, or Donovan song in a movie ever. It's got Hurdy Gurdy Man at the beginning and the end.
That,
genius.
That was excellent and scary.
And especially when you consider that Donovan, who did Hurdy Gurdy Man, which is the opening and closing film, is the father of Ione Sky, who is the girl in the car who Zodiac threatens to throw the baby out the window. That's her. So that's weird that his song and then she's in the movie too.
And great use of the boss from Fight Club.
Yes, exactly.
Hey, I just need to let you know that the only thing that keeps us separate, that separates us, is that Skew Dan is my remote.
Yeah, you shouldn't tell people that. All right. Bye now.
Thanks, Rick.
Thank you.
Bye.
Yeah, don't go telling people you like Steely Dan. They just think less of you. Here's Tim Riley, ladies and gentlemen.
And now, from the Ministry of Truth, this is Tim Riley.
The feds give TriMet $345 million to bring people from Clackamas and Milwaukee to downtown Portland.
Really?
Yeah.
That's like paying somebody to bring fire ants into your house.
Yeah, exactly.
Here's $1,000. Will you just kick me in the genitals?
This is part of that those new train tracks they're going to build to bring people from Clackamas and Milwaukee to downtown Portland. $345 million is what this is going to cost.
Are we being punished for something?
We are. And this little project is going to be done by 2009. So all you people from Clackamas and Milwaukee want to come up here, you have a little wait.
You know what Portland needs is more people in Tigger shirts.
Yeah.
Get somebody on that stat. Jesus, we need more people with scrunchies in their hair. Can we get the trains to just start bringing those people in by the cartload? Jesus.
Isn't that something?
Yeah, it really is something. That's how I'd describe it. Jesus God Almighty.
Well, John McCain is laying up a whole bunch of people due to his lagging fundraising efforts. Campaign manager Terry Nelson says he will have to go without pay for a few months.
I'm obviously honored to serve with Senator.
Sure.
And I decided... I decided that I would take the next few months off the payroll to do that, which I'm proud to do.
That's mighty Christian of you. Know that
how many people he has on this payroll?
You know, it's just Fred Thompson's inbox is probably just overflowing with resumes. Just people desperate trying to get onto that ship.
McCain has a staff of 150 people. Believe it, he has a staff of 150 people doing what? So he's going to let 50, at least 50, or as many as 80 people go.
Well, that's nice of him. Yeah, I'm sure his candidacy's chugging along, though. No no bumps in that road.
But you know who's Mr. Moneybags here? Well, he's independently wealthy. Mitt Romney has run 4,549 TV ads.
Really?
So far.
Yeah, he's
ahead of everyone.
Never going to win.
He has all his own money.
Not going to win.
Second is Bill Richardson with 2,232. And Chris Dodd has even run 1,664 TV ads.
None of these people are going to win anything. They're not going to win. It's either going to be, they're not even going to be nominated. It's either going to be Giuliani or probably now Fred Thompson.
Hunter, 34 TV spots.
Duncan, 34?
Yeah.
You know who is, you know, he's the favorite candidate of Ann Coulter.
Oh,
so that's how you know that guy's never going to win anything. You're talking about just a reverse Midas touch. Talk about the kiss of death. Just be photographed with Ann Coulter with her. She was on Dennis Miller yesterday talking about that. Just her arm around you. Just, yes, I endorse this man here. I mean, that's just giving him the Sicilian kiss of death is what that is. Don't you get the feeling, though, that it's going to be... that it's going to be Fred Thompson just because everybody sort of feels like it is? I mean, it just seems like one of those self-fulfilling prophecies where everybody sort of feels like it's going to be Fred Thompson, therefore it will be Fred Thompson. Like, it's just sort of the general consensus that he's the guy, and so therefore he's going to be the guy. So, you know, well, whatever.
Somebody has decided that.
I just get the... And here's the thing, is I get the feeling that there's just nothing really visibly wrong with him. No. And that's really all it takes to be elected, or to be nominated at this point, that it was the GOP candidate, is that, like... Giuliani is a divorced adulterer, you know, who's a nutcase. McCain is angry all the time and seems to just be seconds away from punching people. Let's see. Who else? Mitt Romney's a Mormon. Which, you know, whatever. He's no more or less crazy than anybody else, but America's not ready for, America's not ready to vote for a Mormon president. They're just not. I mean, the general consensus, I believe, in America is that that religion's just going to look too weird to some guy in Iowa.
He's going to keep buying TV spots because he has tons of money.
Well, because he has tons of money. It would be like electing a Scientologist. And again, whatever, you know. I mean, everybody's sort of equally crazy, it seems to me. But I believe to the great unwashed in the flyover states, mm-hmm. I think the general perception of that faith is just not where it needs to be for that guy to be electable. Who else is on the GOP side? Well, a bunch of people whose names I can't remember.
That Duncan fellow.
There you go. So that's it.
Rudy Giuliani.
So it's going to be Fred Thompson, just because I don't know anything bad about him. And that's really all it takes at this point. So, all right, here's Tim Ryan.
What can you do?
Nothing. Nothing. Give up now.
British Prime Minister Gordon Brown told Parliament that Britain will form a National Security Council. I thought they already had several of these. They have TV cameras everywhere. They are going to address...
Really? I didn't know that.
They are going to address terrorism and come up with a brand new strategy.
The long-term and continuing security obligations upon us require us to coordinate military, policing, intelligence, and diplomatic action, and also to win hearts and minds in this country and around the world.
Pardon me, sir. Are you being served?
Ronald Reagan, he said it was morning in America. That's sort of like afternoon nap time in Britain.
It's evening.
High tea time.
It's evening, just after scone time.
Time for a book before bedtime.
All right.
A disabled Illinois woman is suing a fast food joint after she says she was denied service because she tried to use her foot to buy some food. Don Larson...
How much food can I get for this foot?
Don Larson was at the Rockford McDonald's and says she passed her credit card to a person working at the drive-thru window with her foot. And then she went to the pickup window.
Something's afoot here.
She went out the window to grab the food. She set the food down, raised her hands up really high in the air, and slammed them down on the counter. This was, like, violently.
Apparently she has Holt-Oram syndrome.
I don't understand. Does she not have hands?
It left her with undeveloped hands at
all. Oh, she has to flip her hands.
Yes.
She has, like, this. She's like a thalidomide kid.
The lawsuit claims the worker at the restaurant said to her, quote, "What's the matter with you? You ain't got no arms." Her order was then held back until a manager got involved and decided to give the order to her son.
I don't know why that's so funny. Oh, my God. I don't know why that's so hilarious. I guess it's because of the idea that the guy was pointing it out as something she might not have noticed. As though it was something that escaped her attention. By God. Oh, my God. You're right. Jesus. Oh, what's the matter with you? You ain't got no arms. Nothing escapes the scrutiny of the middle American fast food worker, does it? Oh, God. Isn't that what that guy said when that girl's legs got cut off the other day at this Superman thing? You ain't got no legs.
Mm-hmm.
You know, where was this?
What? Illinois?
Illinois. People in middle America may not have a lot of marketable skills, but noticing whether or not any one of your extremities or appendages is missing, they're crackerjack on that. They're right on top of that. What's wrong with you? You ain't got no arms. She should have totally feigned, like, surprise. Like,
I must have forgot to put them on. I woke up a little late this morning.
I know I did seem to be lighter today. Okay. It's like that guy at my high school graduation who played guitar with his feet. He's a motivational speaker.
Mm-hmm.
I guess you too can play guitar with your feet. But don't. It's my niche. Play the zither. All right. Judy, hi. You're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hello.
Hi. Good afternoon, everyone. I wanted to tell you, yesterday the boy was in the truck with me and he played the Dollar Store clip pregnancy test.
Oh, yeah, there's a promo for our show running that has a little bit of a phone call that you made where it's you and your son and he bought a bunch of pregnancy tests in Vancouver.
I didn't tell him I called you.
Oh, yeah, well.
Yeah, now he left this morning saying, "I'll get you, old lady."
Now he's immortalized. No, wait, that is running in one of our promotional spots.
Well, the thing is, we spread the word as good people, so his friends are now listening to the station.
Excellent.
And now his friends want to know why he needs 20
pregnancy test.
Yeah, because he's a player.
He walked out the door, and I will get you, old lady.
Yeah. Yeah, let's, you know, you laugh now until the cops come to your house and there's just a bunch of garbage bags everywhere. All right. Thank you, Judy.
Thank you.
All right, there you go. Yeah, it's funny now until they find you in a crawl space in Seattle. I'm sorry. Is it too soon?
Too soon.
Nothing rhymes with crawl space. Jeff, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hello.
You know, with all this talk of the Transformers,
yeah,
every time somebody calls up and disses the Transformers, I half expect, you know, Elias on the other end saying, oh, no, they're more than meets the eye.
Nerd.
I'm just saying. Hey, you're one-hit wonder. I just got to say, Rail.
Rail, 1, 2, 3, 4, what are we living for? Rock and roll, rock and roll.
There you have it.
All right, there you go. Thank you, sir. All right. He snuck that in. I wasn't going to let him do it. Oh, let's do this. Let's do this, and then we'll take a break. We have all the stuff we haven't gotten to. Tim, name some things we haven't gotten to yet.
There's a whole stack of things here. It's a fire trap in this area.
Have you got
the guy that got sucked out the window.
Oh, yeah.
Who ended up getting staples in his head.
Have you got this thing about the boy impaled on a tree?
I did see that, but it was a toss-up between the man being sucked out the window or the boy being...
Well, I got the tree story, if you want to do the guy sucked out the window story.
Well, I think we should both get a chance. That sounds good.
How about this? Have you got to think of the people maimed during Joseph and the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat?
I do have 5 missing when a fireworks factory blows up.
It's a great day to be alive.
Those who paid the price for us to celebrate our liberty.
Let's do this call, and then we'll break. We'll come back with all of those stories and more. Scotty, and we'll do this song of his Into Break. I'll play us Into Break here when we're done with this. Let's check in with our good friend, Cross Country Nate. Been a few days we've been with him. Nate, how you doing, brother? Hello. Man?
I'm good. How are you guys?
Oh, we're dandy. Where are you at?
I'm in Charleston, South Carolina.
What is it? Why?
We met some people in Wisconsin who invited us to come out here and stay at their place, so this was the destination. So,
you know, that's how a lot of horror movies start. The next thing you know, they're chasing you through like an abandoned slaughterhouse with a chainsaw.
No, they're just like us. They're great people.
Now, did you caravan back to Charleston, South Carolina with them, or did they give you directions and you just went to their place?
Yeah, they just gave us directions. We drove up through New York and D.C., and we were pretty depressed out in Washington, D.C. Kanish and I were kind of fighting all day at the Capitol, like we were dancing down the streets in sign language.
Now, I was gonna ask that. Now, if you'll forgive the question, because Kanisha is deaf, and so you guys signed to each other. Now, is that a thing? I may have asked you this. Is that a thing you knew before, or did you learn it for her?
No, I took it in high school because I didn't want to do Spanish, and then I fell in love with a deaf girl, so it worked out perfect.
So it should be a punk song. Fell in love with a deaf girl.
Me, so I'm still learning.
So when you have, here's a really silly question. So when you're fighting, I mean, is it just, like, how do you signify that, like, you really mean it when you sign something? I mean, is it really just like you make the gesture really hard with your hand, or is like, you know, like when you're putting something in the internet, like you do all caps. Like, what is the signing equivalent of that? How do you do that in ASL?
You're basically doing a hard robot yell kind of thing.
All right.
A lot of quick gestures, and it's not fun, especially when we're driving.
Oh, yeah, I can imagine. Now, does she, if you guys are fighting and what, if she doesn't want to talk to you, does she just, like, look away or something? If she doesn't want to hear whatever you're saying? So
no, that's my move. I always look away when I don't want to hear what she's saying. But she just keeps on talking and nagging on me.
Well, it's...
But we're over that.
Let me tell you, hearing deaf or not, my friend, that's welcome. Welcome to the way of male-female relationships.
Thank you.
All right, excellent. So you guys are in Charleston, South Carolina. So what are you doing down there? Just hanging out? Or?
Oh, yeah, we're hanging out. We're going to watch some fireworks, then hopefully head over to Texas.
And so, again,
I don't know.
Why?
We're just driving towards Texas, going to Houston, hopefully seeing a soccer game. My cousin, who's from Portland, plays on that Houston Dynamo team for the Major League Soccer.
Right. Now,
and we want to go see that. But
when you're in Houston, you have to tell me later after you're there if it's a hole. Because I have a friend of mine who lived in Dallas for a while. It's just the most hideous town. And I don't mean to malign it. I'm sure everybody there loves it. She said that Houston was like the ugliest place. It was just nothing but urban sprawl.
I flew over it when I flew to New Orleans because we flew in and out of Houston. Mm-hmm. And flying over that place, it was just depressing. All it was power plants and just dirt and
green. It just looked really, really ugly.
Because they use that when they talk about the urban growth boundary in Portland, which is the line beyond which no city sprawl may be allowed to spread. They always use Houston as the example of what happens when you don't have an urban growth boundary. So like in Oregon, you know, you drive for a while and then the city stops because there's a, like a line after which you just have to have nature, which is cool. Mm-hmm. But they always say, as contrasted with Houston, and Houston is like the case study for what happens when you just like have ungrowth or unchecked city growth. And apparently it just looks like a big hole. So, yeah, you'll have to let us know if it's hideous.
All right. I don't know. It might not live up to D.C. That place smelled like the Clark County Fair and looked like the Rose Parade.
Oh, D.C. is a horrible place. D.C. is an awful place. I mean, I hate to say this about Lisa Goddard's her city where she lives, but goddamn, D.C. is just a cesspool. It really is, and it smells like a cesspool. Smells like a sewer, and it looks like a cesspool, and it has the population of just, I mean, everybody I met there, everybody who I met there just looked like they had just been released by some, some sort of a mental health bust that broke down somewhere, so.
Exactly. It was fun, though. Everyone was staring at us. We were dancing in the streets. It was good.
Yeah, excellent. All right, do me a favor, you may not, because I don't know anything about Texas geography. Let me know if you end up going anywhere near a town called Permian. Not Permian, but Odessa. O-D-E-S-S-A. Let me know if you go anywhere, if it looks like you're going to pass anywhere through a town called Odessa.
All right.
Odessa is the setting for Friday Night Lights. It's a real town. It's where Friday Night Lights is based, and it's there's a guy who wrote the book Friday Night Lights who lived there for a couple years when he wrote the book. I have no idea if it's near anything. Certainly don't go out of your way for it. But if you end up going anywhere near Odessa, you'll let me know. I'm gonna have you pick something up for me.
Okay, that works definitely.
All right, excellent. Thank you, sir. Travel safe, my friend.
I will.
All right, there you go. And I'll play this in the break. Here's a little bit of Cross Country Nate singing. This is him, Cross Country Nate. This is a song called Mexico by Cross Country Nate. We'll play a little bit of this in the break. We'll come back after this. More of Tim Riley and Dennis Pitzenbarger on the way. You stay right there. It's the Rick Emerson Radio Show.
Going down to Mexico. One of these days we'll let go of all the things we know. Song for all you skeptics out there. I was walking through Idaho with my brojo, going down the side of a muddy road. Whoa,
there. Why, hello, it's the Rick Emerson Radio Program. It's 503-733-2970. Coming up at the bottom of the hour, another visit from Tim Riley. I think we're talking to Dennis Pitzenbarger at some point. I guess. I suppose. That's the rumor. I almost took more PMS medicine in the kitchen right now, if anybody cares about that. Hi, John.
Are you feeling moody?
No.
Feeling yeah, slower. I got a word that rhymes with crawlspace. Sorry.
What word rhymes with crawlspace?
Nutcase.
That doesn't rhyme.
Nutcase, crawlspace doesn't rhyme?
Well, I suppose space and case rhyme.
Yeah.
Crawlspace would be like all case or all nace.
What?
That's only a half rhyme. It doesn't count.
Okay.
That's like, you know what I mean? Nothing rhymes with crawl space. You found is something that rhymes with space.
I have to find something that rhymes with crawl now, too, that is equally applicable.
That's why, but you won't. That's why I said nothing rhymes with crawl space.
All right, well, I will work on that and try desperately to prove you wrong. Thank you, sir. Best show ever.
You do that. Thanks so much. All right, there you go. Thank you. Spend all the time you need, sir. Okay. Let's see. We'll get this call here in a second. And I guess if we don't hear from Dennis in like 5 minutes, well, I'll just do this call and I'll read this story. And then I got other stuff I can do. We'll let that be dependent upon whether or not Dennis shows up. Rick, I bought a box of Crustios this morning, and the cereal inside is Fruit Loops. Best show this week. All right, thank you, sir. What else?
Yeah, I put all those pictures up on my blog. I have like 21 of them.
God, so cool.
It is really cool.
You know, and I'm such a moron that even though they shafted us with the Quickie Mart thing, I will totally go and I will buy a box of Crustios, and I will claim that I'm not going to eat them, and then I will. I'll break down and eat them because I love Fruit Loops. But I'll buy them and I'll leave them sitting on my desk. Are these all people? Please tell me these people aren't all calling about things that rhyme with crawl space. Seriously, I swear to God. Why did I know? Rick, I'm watching Transformers tonight at Cinetopia. And I am so nervous I feel like throwing up. I'm so glad that I don't care that much. I mean, I care because I have the bet and because, you know, whatever. Transformers. I'm not like a huge Transformers fan, though. I mean, I guess I am in the way that everybody my age is, but I'm certainly not like this guy. No, no disrespect intended, sir. I'm just saying we have different levels of personal. Different levels of personal investment in this film. He says, I'm watching Transformers tonight at Cinetopia. I'm so nervous I feel like throwing up. I have a feeling Michael Bay is about to molest my childhood. That job should be left to someone hot like Scarlett Johansson. All right. Rick, this is about the cell phone caller with that accident on the hill. I'm so happy to hear that you, Sarah, and Tim never leave the confines of your respective neighborhoods. I would hate to have me end up in some sort of trouble just because you wouldn't stop to offer roadside assistance.
I would stop. When did we say we wouldn't stop?
I never said that I wouldn't stop. You're being a dick, sir. You're completely misrepresenting our
opinion. If it's in the middle of the night and I'm driving by myself, I'm probably not going to go down a ravine to see if everything's okay.
Well, seriously, I'm not going to be...
stay there and make sure that until someone gets there.
You're going to get a rope and rappel into a ditch. I don't think so. We never said that we wouldn't stop. I just said, I think our only point was, before this, because it's already one of those things I can tell, it's going to get really misconstrued. Let me just clarify this. I don't think any of us said we wouldn't stop. I think the point we were making is that regardless of whether or not this guy himself stopped and stayed there, what does seem inexcusable is just that, like, the state and the county just spent so much time dithering back and forth about whose job it was, especially when the guy told them exactly where the car was, and then the cop drove by repeatedly over and over and over again and then said something along the line of, well, I don't see it. When what the guy said was, you can't see it. The guy said, the car's not visible. It went off the side. He told them which side of the road it went off. And then he said, the car's not seeable from the road. You'll have to get down there and look for it. And they disregarded that and then had the cop just drive by a bunch of them to go, I can't see it. Well, of course you couldn't see it. The guy said you wouldn't be able to see it. So I never said we wouldn't help anybody. I'm just saying that's a drastic revision, sir. Really? Guess what all these lines over here are?
Crawl space?
Yeah, crawl space calls.
Why don't we welcome Dennis Pitzenberger?
Hi, Dennis.
Hello, how are you?
I'm dandy. I don't have any intro music for you anymore.
That's okay.
Because you changed the name of your show, and now this fuel music is outdated. Nothing rhymes with miles around.
No, it doesn't really.
Stop.
Whoa.
Is there a joke there that I'm missing?
No, Rick's trying to rhyme impossible words with each other.
I said that nothing rhymes with crawl space.
Like, you can't bait the people like that. Of course the phone lines are going
to
fill up.
All right. Here's the thing. Scotty wants me to...
You could be in dangerous territory.
All right, Scotty.
With crawl and space.
Can you turn up the computer for a second?
Mm-hmm.
Except you're not going...
There you go. Scotty, please to be coming to the studio now. I gotta make that guy come up with a new sounder for himself.
Oh. I thought you were gonna make one this past weekend.
Yeah, but I don't care. I was busy trying the Lloyd Dobler speech from Say Anything. Hi, Scotty. Scotty J, our intrepid PAY. Hello, and how are you today?
Do you wanna go over to the other one, Scotty?
What are you trying to do, Scotty?
He's trying to play newsman.
You're trying to plug in a mic. Are you having trouble plugging in your headphones?
I couldn't see the plug doesn't appear to be there. The actual quarter
yes,
inch
gone.
Jack.
Yes, Gremlins.
Tim takes it with him when he leaves.
They stole the plug.
Bring back the jack, Tim.
All right, whatever. All right, you got to come up with a new sounder for yourself because this
Scotty,
I can't play it anymore.
The cheese one.
I can't play it anymore.
A lot of people.
You got to start from scratch. It's got to be something. I'll allow you to use this.
Scotty J, this is David Cassidy.
That's it.
What about
probably
cheese?
Just
Scotty J.
just that. Yes, we played the government cheese one. 79 of government cheese. It's even longer than the one we've got now.
That one was really long.
And it sounds very much the same because it's Chris Farley. It's what's his name? It's Matt Foley. So
okay, I'll come up with something new.
Just use this though. That's just you can use it.
Scotty J.
That's it. Don't use anything else.
If I would screw up on something else and they'd call my cell phone and leave my name, like David Cassidy, they would use a new star.
I'm saying that one's fine.
Like Alice Cooper or something.
Yeah, if only we were able to get Alice Cooper on the phone.
Scotty J.
Yeah. If only you'd succeeded in getting Alice Cooper to call.
How'd
that work out, Scotty?
Yeah,
Scotty. It worked out pretty good, actually. I went and saw him, and we talked for a while, and I kind of wish I had a recorder.
All right. So all of these calls here, except for one, are about things that rhyme with crawl space.
Right, I had a question for you, Rick.
Yeah.
Now that we have the new studio and the phone lines and this, that, and whatnot, can we put multi-calls on at once?
Yeah.
I think we should do that.
Scotty wants me to put all of these people all online at the same time. He wants me to put all these calls on the air at the same time. Why?
Well, it's kind of a coincidence what they're all saying.
Are they all saying the same thing rhymes with crawl space?
Well, I'm not going to give it away, but yes.
Scotty, is the first word in must be called ball?
Ball face?
That's what I've been thinking the whole time.
I'm going to put your ball face in my crawl space.
That's hot as balls.
Can I do it, please? I need a cricket sound. Seriously, why do you always step on the joke like that?
I had one for you, by the way, a cricket sound. That was
ball face in my crawl space.
Oh, I didn't realize you were joking about the thing. Oh, now I feel bad about saying ball face.
What?
But why are you talking about a crawl space?
I don't, because of the guy in Seattle.
Yeah.
He can't hear me. He's dead. So, all right, hold on. All right, hello, sir. Are you there?
Yes, sir.
All right. Scotty,
first up.
Yes.
Good afternoon, Portland.
Don't do that. All right, hold on. All right, hello.
Catchy.
Hello, dentist. Are you there?
Hello.
Hi, hold on. Don't say anything. Hello, are you there?
I am here.
All right, Scotty, I've got all three people. What do you want me to do now? You take it from here.
You
want to
give them a 1, 2, 3?
All right, guys, on the count of three, all right, I want you to tell me what rhymes with crawl space. Okay, ready? 1, 2, 3.
Miles around.
Crawl
face. That was miles around.
Oh, he had a
yeah, that was a great idea,
around.
Scotty. Well done. Fantastic.
Yeah.
I don't understand anything they said.
All right.
I heard ball face.
Yeah, we had so many. It was funny because the chances of having 3-4 calls come in at one time and all be the same.
I couldn't understand what they said.
Okay, guys, on the count of three.
For the love of it. All right.
1, 2, 3.
Doll face.
Oh, okay.
How come I go to ball face? Doll face.
Smiles abound.
Bye now.
Smiles abound.
Hanging up on all of you.
Thank you.
Say goodbye.
I don't know who said. Was that the doctor? Probably the smart one.
Put your doll face in my crawl space. That's pretty great. That is pretty great. Okay, well done. I'm going to put that. That should be in a Marilyn Manson song or something.
Hey, I got to ask Scotty something while he's in the studio. Is that all right?
Yeah.
Oh geez, don't let me put you out for a couple seconds. I was just going to say,
don't be an ass.
In the last couple minutes, I realized that yes, Scotty will be my choice again. I was wondering if you wanted to come by. Matt's out of town again. Imagine that.
And when is this?
I'm surprised.
This weekend,
this Saturday. Oh, it's a possibility. Real good possibility.
You think you can fit me in between, like maybe the high school dance,
between passing out and
in the high school dance,
waking up in a bathtub somewhere,
the prom that I have to DJ for. Yeah.
Are you DJing a prom?
No.
All right. So do you have plans this Saturday?
I don't think so.
All right.
No.
Would you like to come by and help me host Miles Around?
Yeah, I think I could probably...
You think you could fit me into your schedule? should I have my people talk to your people? Maybe your publicist, maybe?
You could slum it.
No, let me check with my blackjack, and I will get back to you on that right away.
All right. All right. Thank you. Scotty J, ladies and gentlemen.
Thank you, Scotty.
All right, 503-733-2970. We'll take a break here in a second. Talk more to Dennis Pittenberg. Let me do a few of these. Hi, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hello.
Hey, Rick. It's Chris. How's it going, man?
What's up?
Hey, if you're driving through town and you're going to go and take the turnoff going over the Ross Island Bridge, there's a 7-Eleven sitting there, and I'm not sure what the cross streets are or whatever. But they had the really cool cutouts in there, the Buzz Cola, the Crustio.
This is the 7-Eleven coming from the east side or the west side?
As I was going through downtown and heading over the river.
Oh, that's the one on First and Arthur.
is that the first and Arthur one?
Well, it's got to be.
They had the cardboard cutouts of Marge and Homer there. I thought it was a pretty cool representation. Yeah,
is that the one that's got the? But is that the one that it's got the real ghetto drawings in the window, like the real bad paintings in the window of their faces?
No, I think they had the cutouts there. In the windows.
Mm.
It was pretty neat.
All right, I'll have to go look. Now I have to go in.
I was in there getting a cup of coffee. I was looking around going, hey, this is pretty cool.
Right.
Hey, real quick, the Madden thing was genius. I was laughing my butt off on that one.
Oh, well, you
Madden
know,
and Nicole Richie, that was awesome.
You can't, if only I was on SNL, sir, it would have been that much funnier. So,
oh, God, it was hilarious. At the top of the show, you said it's day 12. Forgive my ignorance. What day 12? What is that?
I got to put this on the fact somewhere. That is a reference to the Bob and Doug McKenzie song, The 12 Days of Christmas. And I don't even know why it stuck with this, but it's one of those things where they're counting down the 12 days of Christmas. You know, on the first day of Christmas, my true love gave me, blah, 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 blah. And then they get to the day 12 one, and Bob, I think it is, Bob and Doug McKenzie says, greetings and welcome to day 12. And it's just a thing that stuck into my head for some reason.
Oh, okay.
I don't know why. That's where that comes from.
All right, now complete my visual. The color of Sarah's bra strap.
Bye now.
Thank you. Bye.
Thank you. All right, and we're done. You know, they're like Scotty. They're always really good, and then it's like one sentence too much. Just one step too far, and then they're in Creepyville. All right.
Hi, Dennis. Hey, how you doing? Did you ever watch that video that I sent you?
I did, the one with all the Democrats going, Saddam's got weapons of mass destruction.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, I've been kind of in and out of the office a lot these last couple of days. I don't know if you've had a chance to cover that, but I find that so remarkably ironic that, you know, it's just, let the mudslinging begin.
It's
great. In the email, it's just like you and Lisa Goddard are having your own personal, you know, political playground for the next 18 months.
I'm sorry, I'm just distracted by this email that says, Rick, I'm going to start a new website, mycrawlspace.com. A place for friends. All right.
I'm sorry.
503-733-2970. We're here with Dennis Pitzenbarger. All right. Well, let me... I don't even know what to do here. Hold on. It's so confusing. All right. We got a break here in a minute. We got more news. We got Dennis. We got calls. I got an automotive question, and not one that I've contrived because you're the car guy. I really do have an automotive question.
Do you?
I guess I should just ask you now. Let me ask you this. You know, I drive a Focus. That's not a big secret. Can I just ask you a question? This has mystified me for the longest time. I don't know, because it's set up so confusingly in every car that's ever had this feature. A, I don't know what overdrive is. And B, I don't know when I'm supposed to have overdrive on and when I'm not. And C, why is overdrive in every car? It was in my Sentra like this. It's in my Focus like this. It's set up all backward to where the light is on when it's off. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I got a little, like, on my gear shift. It's got a little button for the overdrive. And the light comes on that says overdrive is now off. Why is it set up so it's all reversed? Like everything else, there's a light that comes on when the feature is on. Overdrive comes on when the feature is off. Makes no sense at all.
Well, I mean, I can...
What is overdrive?
Okay, overdrive, much like your bicycle, to use an example, is there's a... If both the front ring gear and the back ring gear were the same size, that would be a one-to-one. Do you follow what I'm saying? Like, it has, like, the same ratio, like the size,
sure.
That's one-to-one. Overdriven is when one is smaller than the other. So, basically, you'd be spinning slower, but yet going faster.
Why would I need this function?
Because it saves gas. And it actually uses less power and less emissions, and therefore, I hate to say it, helping the planet, but in a sense, you're creating less wear on your vehicle, you're creating less use of gas, and you're creating less emissions.
Let me ask you this. Why would I not want that on all the time?
The reason why they used to have on and off switches on the overdrives was some of the first transmissions had overdrives, but it was a matter of the transmission strength, the internal strength. You want to pull it in and out of that gear because the transmission wasn't smart enough. It would search or hunt in between. Let me paint an example for you. Have you ever been in your car when the overdrive's on, and then it kind of is just in and out, and in and out, and in and out of overdrive?
Sure, yeah.
Okay, that means that you should switch it out of overdrive because that means you're either going in stop-and-go traffic, you're on the freeway. It creates unnecessary wear on your transmission. Your Focus is fairly new. I wouldn't...
Yeah.
I just drive it in overdrive all the time.
All right, okay. Excellent. Fantastic. See, there you go. Rick, I just came up with the best show bit ever.
talk about a 40 share. You ready? Holding onto your seat? The name of the bit is Beat Scotty J with Toasters Wrapped in Pillowcases. Just the thought of it makes me smile. Thank you.
Can you do that Sunday?
Richard?
I need them Saturday.
All right, take a break here. Come back. Tim Riley, the bottom of the hour, and more from Dennis Spitzenbarger. You stay there. It's 503-733-2970. It's the Rick Emerson Radio Show. Don't go anywhere. Change my MySpace quote to "You ain't got no arms," with a whole lot of exclamation marks behind it. All right,
Rick, why you want finger food?
Here's your food. Do you want a hand with that?
The middle America at its finest. Pat Sorey will be back soon.
Now, from the Ministry of Truth, this is Tim Riley.
But it's time to turn our attention to the guy who got sucked out of the broken airplane window and ended up with staples in his head.
Fantastic.
Chris Fogg works as a flight nurse for his family's company, Attaboy. Boy spelled B-O-I. It's an airline ambulance company, Attaboy, A-D-A-B-O-I. While he was taking a flight, it seemed like a normal one. Apparently, the window broke and sucked him halfway out. So we have him here discussing his ordeal. Hopefully this will work, but I can't promise. So let's find out what happens here. Connecting to media. Buffering.
Tell me, when did this all happen?
Wednesday.
Wednesday.
Yeah.
Tell me what you were doing Wednesday and what day it was.
Well, Wednesday
his thoughts seemed jumbled for some reason.
Take a patient to Seattle, and on the way back from Seattle, we got diverted to Twin Falls that there was yet another patient that needed to fly back. Another patient needed to fly to Seattle, so I went in to pick up the patient, and
this is gripping.
And we took off from Twin Falls.
He's got staples in his head. I'm starting to think.
It was 6:08 when we took off, and about 18 minutes after we'd taken off, we were still on the climb, and according to FAA, because I didn't have the particulars, we were about 20,000.
I was just going to say, does somebody there at the news organization have an edit key?
In the side of the plane, and then I could feel the plane going into a dive, and I thought maybe that was it, we were going down. But I had my left hand up against the ceiling, and my knees, I think, were against the wall, and I was pushing with all my might to try to, you know, get back in, but I just wasn't able to, and finally I was able to get enough air going between me and the plane.
I thought if you're going to get sucked out of an airplane, learn how to tell a story.
I thought it would be more exciting than that somehow.
That was more than 15 minutes of fame. We finished the whole story.
15 minutes of fame in real time. I thought that wasn't possible, though.
It is.
Whatever.
Attaboy Airlines.
Apparently on MythBusters, they said that they came to the conclusion that it didn't happen that way. Well, maybe that's just from the gunshot or something. All right.
Nick Lachey and his girlfriend, TV personality Vanessa Minnillo, are trying to blank the release of some raunchy pictures of them together.
Here we go.
Lachey's attorney, Marty Singer, has mailed letters to various weekly entertainment magazines warning them if they publish the photos, they'll face legal action. The shots are taken while the pair was in a jacuzzi at a private resort in Mexico. They're said to be quite explicit. Singer claims that the pics, quote, are a clear invasion of privacy and were taken by a Mexican photographer who violated the country's law.
In Mexico.
Yeah, imagine that. People will go to court for breaking the law in Mexico.
Seriously. Never mind. How explicit could they be, though, if they're going to run them like the star or something? They can't be that explicit.
Black bars for it. Let's see here. Recent pictures were leaked to show this woman, Manilo, and actress Lindsay Lohan posing provocatively with knives.
Really?
Yeah.
Sarah?
It's on the blog. You haven't seen that?
I'm sorry. Forgive me.
How high were they when they did that, by the way?
Yeah, I
don't even know what you're talking about. I gotta go look. All right. Well, let's continue here while I look up these knife pictures of Lindsay Lohan.
Microsoft founder Bill Gates is no longer the world's wealthiest man. Mexican tycoon Carlos Slim is worth 67. Carlos Slim is worth $67.8 billion, about $8.6 billion more than Gates. Slim controls America Mobile, Latin America's largest cell phone company. A strong 27% gain, and the company's stock is credited for helping Mr. Slim move past Mr. Gates.
He sounds like a loan shark. My name is Mexico Slim. Would you like to... Do you suppose... And I did think about this when I read this story. Oh, by the way, at Sarah's blog, there's a whole bunch of great... you really ought to go. There's a whole bunch of great Simpsons photos of this, like, 7-Eleven. Oh, my God. Is that Madonna?
Is she posing provocatively?
Yeah.
No. Well, if by provocatively you mean, does she look hideous? Oh, my God. Is that Sharon Stone? Oh, my God. Jesus. I know I sound like a woman right now, but holy God.
They all go downhill eventually, Rick. Including ourselves.
No. There's downhill, and then there's whatever has become of Sharon Stone.
Oh, yeah. That was from last week.
That's from her little-known stint as the Crypt Keeper, apparently. Jesus God. That's the worst photograph I think I've ever seen of a woman who was perceived to be a sex symbol.
You know what I really thought it was? I thought it was Daryl Hannah making a weird face.
I mean, really, no fooling. That might be the worst photograph ever taken of somebody who is generally perceived to be hot. It's even worse than those Jenna Jameson photographs from last month. Jesus God. All right, this is... Well, why? Hello. Hello, Stephanie Tanner from Full House. How old is she?
I think she's old enough, Rick.
She looks old enough. I'm sorry, your blog is just all... Jesus, it's just nothing but boobs on this blog. God! Okay, there's Britney Spears' boobs, and here's some other woman.
CBS wouldn't give that blog a failure.
I can't even scroll down this page. It's too difficult.
You're getting visitors from outside the windows for that.
Seriously, I just don't even know. All right, where am I looking for these knife photographs?
Yeah, you scroll down all the way past this. It's before all the Paris.
Oh, hello. Wait, hold on. This is a photograph of... Okay, that is just hot. Is this Lindsay Lohan holding a knife to the throat of Nick Lachey's girlfriend?
Yeah.
What's her name? Vanessa...
Vanessa Manilo.
Manilo? Are they having an argument? Isn't that a cookie? I don't know. It doesn't matter to me. That's just hot. Really?
Sharing a brownie.
Really? No, see right here? It's Lindsay Lohan, who looks high, holding a knife to the throat of Vanessa Milano.
I don't know about you. You know, I've seen so many pictures of...
If she was just carving my name into her arm with a knife, that's the only way that this could be hotter. Seamus,
so weird.
No, Seamus will back me up on that.
I know he probably will.
How can you even tell when she's not high? Every time you take a picture of her, anybody takes a picture of Lindsay Lohan, she looks high. How can you even tell when she's not high anymore?
Well, these ones, she looks especially high.
Yeah, she really does. And especially hot. You know, really? there's no photograph of a woman that isn't made hotter by her holding a knife to somebody's throat. All right, here's Tim Riley, kids. Are we gonna be hearing, by the way, the You Ain't Got No Arm story several more times today?
You will, during the Like Your Show.
Fantastic.
Weekend radio personality Art Bell is retiring for the fourth time. He wants to spend more time with his child bride and his new daughter. Art Bell previously retired in 1998, 1999, 2000, 2001, 2002, 2003, 2004, 2005.
By the way, he now is living in Pahrump, Nevada again. He's back from living in wherever it was. I think his wife might be old enough to bring him to the country now. So now they're back living in Nevada. It's so funny you mention this because I heard... for the first time in years, I heard Art Bell this weekend. I was flipping around the dial late and just seeing what was on. Landed on the Art Bell show, and I haven't listened to that guy in like 8-9 years. I swear to God, it was like I picked up right where I left him. Turned to the Art Bell show. Exciting new evidence. Roswell, very stunning news about the Roswell crash. But I mean, it was like just picking up the thread right where I left him. Hadn't changed at all. So God bless him. All right. So there.
That's it for now. We'll hear more about the lady who doesn't have any arms.
All right, there.
The second one.
Wait, it seems like there's... She stayed out of arm's way.
There's a new arms race underway.
All right. There you go, kids. Ladies and gentlemen, Tim Riley. Fantastic. All right, there you go. Greatest newsman. We're back at 4, 5, 6, and 7, top of the hour, all the way through Lycus. We're here with Dennis Pitzenberger. Hello, sir.
Hey.
I have all of these great stories to get to. I got this Entourage. You watch Entourage on Sunday?
Oh, God. You know, that show... You and I have gone back and forth about Entourage, about the fact that I personally think the show needs to be switched to an hour.
See, but that's like when people tell me we need to be 5 hours long. I feel like a little less than people want, you know.
And that's why they've been able to maintain for so long, is that it is a shorter show.
Yeah, because when it ends, you're always like, oh, already? Oh, I want more, you know. I'd rather have, you know, a little too little than a little too much.
I think 3 hours wasn't enough for you guys. I think 4 hours is perfect. 5 hours would be too much.
I think an hour-long Entourage would be too much. That's my take on it.
And I understand why you said that, because you want the audience to be left wanting more. But the character, the problem with that, this is why I have a problem with that, is... In the first few episodes of the show, there was only character development with a couple of the with Vince and Ari. Now there's so much development in the sub characters,
like
with
Johnny
Turtle and Johnny Drama. That I mean, come on. And where did the one? I don't even know what her name was, but the girl that gets a hold of Johnny Drama.
Oh, dude, I was just going to talk about that. First of all, what happened to that hot girl that Turtle was trying to bang? She just vanished.
Oh, yeah, the girl from the body shop.
What's his name? Not Roscoe. Whatever his name was. Russell? Roland? Russell. The guy who ran the body shop.
Yeah.
Rufus. His daughter. Anyway, yeah. She just vanished. It's like how we're never going to learn Turtle's real name now. Just like Mrs. Ari doesn't have a first name. She's just Mrs. Ari.
Yeah.
Boy, let me just tell... Okay, I got two... I wrote down two observations about Sunday's Entourage, which I know people haven't seen. But I won't spoil anything.
You've already seen the new one?
Yeah, Sunday.
You're right.
No, this last Sunday.
Oh, I was going to say, if you've already gotten pre-screened, dick.
I'm going to say these two observations about this last Sunday's Entourage. A, I don't even know which order to take these. I have to be very circumspect about this first one. A, it caught me a little off guard. This is what makes Entourage so great. They have the most deft touch. Things that could end up being bad or off-putting or even with Ari, offensive. Because Ari says a lot of very homophobic, offensive, racist things. But, you know, they make it work in a way that is very tricky to do. Just like this, on Entourage on Sunday, and I will not... be careful how I put this. On Entourage, there was not maybe extended discussion, but I would say repeated reference to a sexual act that is not frequently discussed on television or anywhere else. It's...
There's a term for it. I don't think you can
use
it.
Well, it's like with a car. There's all different kinds. There's all different parts of your... There's all different... Like, if you got a four-wheel car, four wheels, there's all kinds of components on those wheels.
Well, it would be like if someone said, you know, I really like things to be clean. I'm very anal retentive. There would be
That was
some
totally
sort of,
not the way I was going
to
go.
Oh, well, sorry. That's where I was trying to get... There was, you know... Painting the colorful stage.
I was gonna say in your car there's the roof, there's the doors, there's the tire, the hubcaps, the rim.
Well, there.
The gas cap. That's all I'm gonna say.
All right.
And maybe you Sex and the City types hear that kind of conversation a lot. But boy, goddamn. And if you saw the episode, you know what I'm talking about. Where it was so unsettling. It was so disturbing.
Well, she's been... That girl has been on a bunch... I can't remember the last time I seen her. And I know that must have been some sort of suit or some sort of get-up to make her the way she was.
Boy, it was really unsettling, though. But my other observation is this. Now, maybe you know the answer to this. But I'm watching the closing credits for Entourage on Sunday. And... How do I put this? Basically, the subplot is that Johnny Drama and Turtle hook up with these two older women. They're 30s, 40s. Two older women. A really skinny, very tan, very plastic surgery girl, you know, very much like the L.A. type, trying to hold on to the looks. And then another girl, blonde, fair skinned, but very big. I mean, just a very, very large woman.
Rubenesque.
Yeah, Rubenesque. And so here's the thing. So one of the women is sort of extreme looking because she's fat. And the other woman is extreme looking. She's very skinny, but very baked.
looking, you know, the golden brown baked look. And here's the thing. In the credits, it says, blah, 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 Colleen Camp in the credits. Now, Colleen Camp was the maid in the movie Clue. That's how you will know her, Sarah.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. One of those women in Entourage, either the really freaky, fake tan, collagen lip, bony one, or the, hey, I'm a huge fat woman one, one of those women was Colleen Camp, who was hot as balls when she was the maid in Clue. I swear to God, I don't know which one of those women was Colleen Camp.
Right, was the thick, thin girl, was she amply big-breasted?
Not really.
Maybe she's the big girl then, because her boobs kind of looked a little fake in Clue.
She must have been, it must have been, it was the girl that ended up taking care of Johnny Drama. And I had, you know, I have to say that they...
Wait, were they older? Because it's saying
they were like
she's 54 years old.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, they were joking about the early 80s, and, you know, it's just...
Yeah,
you know,
I mean, it could have been... There's no way either one of those women was 54, though. Was there another woman in the... In
L.A.?
Episode?
In L.A.?
Well, maybe. I guess she might have been 54, and, I mean, just had a lot of plastic surgery. Because, yeah, there's a woman who was freakishly skinny and tanned and looked very, you know, fake in that L.A. way. And then there was another woman who, again, and I think it was a fat suit, but who was really very, very, she was a person of size.
She looks a little puffy in these recent pictures.
I'm so unclear. Now I have to Google it. But, and I was, and the whole, when I saw it in the credits, I'm like, Colleen Camp, the hot maid from Clue, she was one of those women, and I honestly don't know which woman it was. Now I have to Google it. Do we have to break?
Yeah, why don't you Google during the break?
Okay, but Dennis, you got something very important to pimp when we get back, right?
Yeah, I was going to say, the part that was funny is the way that when Johnny got, say, that
service
positioned in the hospital, his look of just, all right, I'm just going to take it.
Yeah, oh, God. All right, back after this, the Rick Emerson Show, Nobody, we return next. Picture of the Full House chick. It's distracting. It's freaky.
I know. She's got enormous knockers.
She's the new Salil Moon Fry. We're here with Dennis Pitzenbarger, Miles Around, Saturday 9 to 11. You got a big thing coming up. Pimp away, sir.
All right. Well, obviously this weekend I sounds like I'm going to have Scotty J if he can fit me into his publicist's schedule. And then obviously after the show we'll be going over to the Big Shindig. I think Sarah's going to run over there and see some of the bands as well. And then later that evening we are having the NASCAR viewing party at the Cheerful Pit Stop over on Highway 10 in Beaverton. I got to go make sure and make a little shout out for PDXAutoClick.com. And of course, on the 21st we're having the Car Toys, our first official remote with Miles Around. We're going to be out at the Car Toys Car Show out there, Portland Meadows, on the 21st of July. So if you get a chance, 777 is going to be going. We are all going to stop, collaborate, and listen.
Excellent.
But if you once you before you get to do that, you have to come by the Cheerful Pit Stop, have a beer with us, and then head down to watch Vanilla Ice.
Cool. So you got
to
come in on coming back out on Friday and remind everybody. About
and
that.
I will. And of course, I'll see you guys tomorrow because I'll probably be the only salesperson working tomorrow. By
sure,
the way,
it's not a world of men. You know?
Well, I mean, it's
the world of clock watchers.
Fourth of July is the stupidest holiday to take off in the world. I mean, why? If I was the, if I owned CBS, I'd be like, you're all working. And then you get the fifth off.
Well, or just, it's not that I don't respect the 4th of July. I do. Yeah, everybody knows that about me. I'm just saying, it seems like holiday-wise, you should have Monday or Friday. You make it a three-day sweep.
Well, sure.
Because everybody's gone right now anyway. The whole office is closed. I know I sound like Johnny Apple Polisher, but I mean, we have no work done tomorrow, and then half of today is gone.
Well, sure. So you can load up all day and then get ready to go out at 10 tonight on a weeknight? I know.
I can work and go to barbecues at the same time because we're off at 3, so I can make it to the barbecue.
You know who won't be here tomorrow because he has no work ethic is Scotty J. Scotty's going to be gone.
Scotty J's not going to be here?
No, he's not going to be here tomorrow.
I only have two morning appointments. I'll come work out of his office and be the screen caller.
We're all going to be here because, seriously, like, you can't go drink at 3:01. You know what I mean?
Well.
Yeah, all right.
He's probably busy watching his plasma and his crapper.
Yes, random douchebag caller. Who has the drinking problem now?
Bam! In your face with that callback. All right. We have next CNN radio correspondents Lisa Goddard, Steve Kastenbaum, and Amanda Moyer. Don't forget, we'll be talking to Lisa Goddard, Jim Roop, Amanda Moyer, and Steve Kastenbaum tomorrow from the Nathan's Famous Hot Dog Eating Contest. We'll be here live tomorrow on the 4th of July. Rick Emerson Show produced today and every day with Olivia Talented, Sarah X. Dillon for AM 970. Solid State Radio in the newsroom. It's Tim Riley, the PA, Scotty J., the Gatekeeper, Dave Zinn. Thank you to Dennis Pitzenbarger, milesaround.com. As always, something special to grind it down. Do try to help the retarded and watch out for snakes. See you all tomorrow. Bye.
How's your woodcock doing?
Oh, my darling little woodcock.